from the high desert in the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be in the world's 25 known time zones, all covered like a blanket by this program, Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell, honored, privileged to be with you through the weekend. And in a moment, what an adventure we are going to have. You know, it's not that often, I guess, that I get to be a real fan, you know, an actual fan, real fan of another show, but there's a program I've been telling you about week in and week out called Dead Like Me, and I'm a fan. I mean, there's no two ways about it. I'm a big fan. It's on Showtime, and we're going to talk with one of the stars of that program, Ellen Muth, and Hank Cohen, who is none other than, like, the guy in charge, president of MGM Television Entertainment. Big time. All right, just very quickly here at the beginning of the program, the photograph on my webcam on the website, coastcoastam.com, is of a frog here in the desert in my, well, on my back porch. He's taken up residence here, and I went out and took a photograph of him last night. That is good luck, I am told. Bad luck is the storms we're having in the desert right now. Oh, we're having some wickedly, wickedly big storms. And the lightning is flashing all around us out here. I have a feeling Death Valley's filling up out there. I don't know. Bad storms here in the desert and bad storms in the Caribbean. I have it now. 910 millibars. 910 millibars. That's like one of the five worst in all of history. And I'm going to put a shot up on the webcam of that after a while. But in a moment, in the first hour, we're going to talk with Hank Cohen and Ellen Muth all about a program I love, called Dead Like Me, coming right up. Even from the time I began to see the previews for the program Dead Like Me on Showtime, my wife and I both said, oh man, that's for us, right down our alley, and it would be right down your alley too if you haven't seen it yet. Trust me on this one, as I've been saying for weeks and weeks. So now, here I think and I hope is Hank Cohen, who's none other than president of MGM Television Entertainment. Hey, Hank.
Hey, Art, how are you?
I'm great. Where are you, Hank?
I am at home in the valley.
Okay, and let's see if we can... Here she is, the star of that program. One of the main star, I guess. Ellen Muth, who plays Georgia on Dead Like Me. Ellen, are you there? Okay, you're really kind of light, so you're going to have to almost scream at us, Ellen.
Okay.
But let's throw the first question to Hank. Hank, for those in my audience, and that would be some number perhaps, who have not yet seen Dead Like Me, how would you describe the program?
Well, first of all, Art, I'd like to take the opportunity while we're on the show to thank you for all the nice words. It's, you know, it's funny. This is one show, you know, when you're an executive, you love all your shows, but this one in particular, I think it's so special, and I think it speaks to so many people on an emotional level that I am very, very proud of it, and I appreciate your support.
You have every right to be proud of it. It's something different, and there's so much that's just sort of the same old junk on TV that this is so different. So, I mean, how would you describe it to someone who isn't?
Yeah, you know, it's hard. I would say it's darkly comedic. I think it's insightful. I think it's emotional, and I think that it takes someone to watch it and get by the surface and penetrate, you know, go underneath what the show is really talking about. And if you really look hard enough, the show is always about. I think death is sort of a metaphor for second chances.
Well, in this case, it certainly is.
Yeah. I mean on the show.
Sure. No. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Ellen. Describe your character. If I were to have to describe you, I'd say sort of a pouty, reluctantly rebellious reaper.
I only have pouty lips. That's what I've been told. So it's interesting that question you just asked Hank, because it really can't be described in one or two categories. You know, it's not a science fiction, but it's not a comedy, and it's not a drama. It's kind of everything combined. And my character starts out as being very, you know, depressed and has problems with authority. And this season two, she's changed a lot for the better, and come to terms with, you know, her sexuality and who she is, and she keeps on growing, which is odd for a Grim Reaper, because most of the time, you know, they stop growing and they just stay where they were when they died. But George really is growing.
Well, it seems like whether it's movies or television, the people who have the greatest success actually usually kind of share some characteristics with the character they play in real life.
Right.
Is there some of that here?
It's funny you should ask that, because I've been asked that before, and I found that I have a very deadpan sense of humor. But in terms of, you know, like her family dynamics, that I can't relate to. But as far as her actual personality, I would say that I am very deadpan and sarcastic, and I do have actually trouble with authority. And,
that would be Hank.
Not with Hank. I was just about to say, not with Hank, though.
Of course not. We get along great.
He doesn't boss me around. So.
No.
Oh, that's good.
In fact, a lot of times it's the other way around, Art.
In the first season, your character, Ellen, George, had a sort of a dead side, sort of a looking, sort of a doped out looking George, and I don't see that in the second season, right?
No.
It's just the pretty George in the second season.
Yeah, she's starting to accept, you know.
Well, Art, one thing I know you asked that to Ellen, but the I think our producers, John Macias and Stephen Gottschall, who write and run the show, have done a great job this year, because, you know, so many times in television, shows come along and you know, you really like the show the first season, and it's pretty much virtually the same characters for 5 years. And I think in from one season to the next, these guys, our characters have grown so much, which people do in real life. And I think it's odd that a show that you know, I don't think anyone would argue that, you know, we don't have proof that there really are Grim Reapers out running around there, so it is somewhat fantasy. But the growth of our characters from one season to the next has been enormous, and I think people really do grow that way, and I think it reflects real life. And I think George, last year, was struggling with sort of, you know, her passing. I think this year she's struggling with living. And I think it's a throwback to where she was before the toilet seat hit her.
Well, yeah, the
that's also seat. One difference, you know, Ellen, you forgot to point out that between the real life Ellen and George is that when the toilet seat hit you and you were real life Ellen, it just wounded you. It didn't kill you.
This is true. Yeah.
Again, there's got to be a lot of Georgia actually in you, because you play it too well, or maybe that's just something that
Maybe I'm just a good actress.
Yeah, maybe you're just a good actress. That's right. Now there's some of that in you for sure.
Oh yeah, definitely.
What's the set atmosphere like, Ellen?
It's great. I mean, I've never worked with a crew and cast that I have no complaints over at all. I love everyone, and everyone in the production. And it's funny because you get us together in the Waffle House, and everyone's just joking around and singing, and helps to keep it very light. And because it is a dark show, it's a dark comedy, and you need to take that break, you know, from the show and get into reality. And it's really funny if you were to ever see the gag reel. We're always goofing around, you know, before the actual scene starts.
Yeah, I'd really like to see that. When does that get released?
The gag reel?
Does it ever get released?
I don't think so.
You just gave me an idea, Art.
Don't these things occasionally and finally leak out somewhere?
Sometimes in the DVDs they do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who thinks up? I mean, the deaths are incredible. I remember, like, the surfboard, the guy dancing on the bar, you know, the banana peel, and then the guy's head crushed in the door. Who right. in the world thinks all this stuff up?
That
no, I asked the writers that, and they actually have sessions that aren't even story or character sessions, just death stunt sessions.
How can we kill somebody?
Yeah, they really do focus, and then they try and write to the stunt.
Yeah.
You know,
and they're great at it.
You know, you said this yourself. I mean, Dead Like Me walks a really, really fine line. I mean, just sort of walking up to the edge of sacrilege, I suppose, for some who view it. You know, I mean, stealing from the dead, that kind of thing. And I wonder how that line is walked. How fine? That must be a real fine line.
I think it's a fine line. And I, you know, one of the things that I think is so interesting about the show, while it is supposedly, I guess, at its core, about death, I think people that watch it, and a lot of people have said this to me, and in fact, my nephew, who even had a chance last year to read a couple of the scripts before we shot him, he said, you know. And he had seen a couple of the episodes as well. He said, it's funny, this show makes me a little less afraid to die.
Yeah.
And I think it really does do that because it, you know, even what we tried to convey in the main title, and I think it's a really cool main title, is, you know, death is all around us. It's there just as much as, you know, when we go to work and when we play basketball and when we eat lunch and when we're on the bus. It is everywhere, but it's just a part of life. So let's get on with it and let's not make it this big monster that some people, you know, unfortunately, or, you know, rightfully so, whatever, do, because it is just, it's natural and it's going to happen.
Yeah, that's quite true, isn't it? The show sort of, I don't know, you come away with the impression that, look, every second you're here, it could happen. You know, death could happen any time, any way, in the most unexpected way, at the most unexpected time.
So make it count while you have your chance to live.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's right. George.
Ellen.
I'm sorry. See, that's what fans do. Ellen, do you believe in the? Do you think there's an afterlife?
It's funny you should ask that because that's probably the one question that I get asked
more than any other. Yeah,
and you know, it's one of those things that, you know, you can't really figure it out. So I can't really say yes I do or no I don't because you don't know unless it happens until you die. And I'd like to say yes.
But you don't know.
Right, exactly. And it's one of the unmentionables because you really don't know.
I interview real-life people here all the time who have died on the operating table, that kind of thing, and have gone to the other side and seen it or gone partway to the other side. And these are real serious people, you know, older people have had heart attacks or transplants or whatever, and they actually died on the operating table, and they tell all these incredible similar stories.
Right.
And so I'm kind of like you, but I'm leaning toward it does seem like there might be something, and I guess that's what the show is going to keep, you know, exploring. It's a comedy, it is dark somewhat, and it's also about the supernatural, so it's many things, isn't it? But what? Most of all, comedy, I guess?
I would say it's a dark comedy. Usually when people ask me, you know, what is it about or what kind of surface does it have, I say it's a dark comedy. And it's interesting what you said about the people on the operating table and how they died, you know, whether it be for a minute or 2 minutes, because I've heard, you know, people who try to commit suicide actually go to this very dark place where they see, like, things like gravelings, pretty much.
Gravelings, that's right, from the show.
And then people who die from natural causes and then come back, remember a light, you know, in a tunnel. And it's very interesting because it's kind of saying, you know, if you die happy, then what you get is happiness. But
that's
if you die
exactly
in a
right.
dark, morbid sense, that's what you get as well.
Yeah, this
yeah.
is
Ellen, this... remember the episode where you guys were having to monitor people's, quote, last thought?
Yeah.
And it was such a great episode because when they categorized them, it was like 75% of people, the last thought they had was a regret.
Right.
So the whole point was, you know what, don't regret. Live your life and do what it is you're setting out to do and don't wish you had done it.
That's another thing, isn't it? I mean, almost every show has a really strong moral message.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, they do it without you even knowing that you're getting the message until you think back on it. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think we entertain first, which I think the more successful shows and movies do.
Right.
But when you think back on it, you realize, and you know, these writers are so good at, and the actors too, obviously, but at setting it up early on, kind of what it's going to be about, and then you just enjoy the story, and at the end, it all ties up, and it's not in a pretty bow, but just in a sort of full circle sort of way.
There's one show that really, really sticks out in my mind. I was at the time retired. I've been in and out of radio a bunch of times, and I was getting ready to come back in and do the weekend program for the network, and I had a lot of fans, and so I simply went up to a website, and I posted the phrase, mysterious and reassuring.
Uh-huh. Oh, wow.
They went berserk speculating about when I was coming back and all the rest of it. I just fell in love with that phrase, mysterious and reassuring. That would be the show where you had the photo album, which was not a scrapbook, and entitled it Mysterious and Reassuring. And I thought that was such a classic piece while you were going through how these people met their endings.
Yeah,
that was funny.
Do you ever have any input, Ellen, into how your character plays out her role? I mean, do you ever, like, sort of, I don't know, in the middle of the set, say, hey, what? I wouldn't do that, or I would do that, or let's do this?
I really have no limits as far as, you know, like, what happens to George, because it's not as though she's alive and she has control over what happens. You know, a lot happens that she has no control over, because either her boss controls her, or which would be Mandy Patinkin, or the Gravelings control her, or Dolores Herbig.
Brown eyes. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's basically how I feel about, you know, what goes on around her. She really has no control over. But that's true in everyday life as well.
Are you a religious person or spiritual? I mean, you had quite a bit to say about near death, so this is obviously something you thought about a little bit, Ellen.
Only because people have asked me so much, and I was trying to figure out what's an interesting answer I could give them. And finally I realized, you know, just be honest, and the truth is that I try not to dwell on things that I know I can't have an answer to.
Do you think most families in America are dysfunctional?
Dysfunctional? Oh, absolutely. I think I'm ashamed to say that, but it seems as though everyone I know has some kind of dysfunctional family. You know, obstacles that are, you know, basically things that you think you may be able to fix, but you really can't, because once your parents get set, you know, they're set in their ways. And like, my dad is 64 years old. There's no way I'm going to change him. And if we want to be dysfunctional, then that's the way it is. And I honestly believe, from all the people I've met, with all my traveling and everything, everyone has a dysfunctional family.
Your mom in the show is so dysfunctional. She is the most generally unhappy woman.
I was just about to say that
I've ever seen in my whole life. I wonder if in the program you will somehow come to reconcile with her, or there's, you know, they keep your family and your sister and your mom in the show, so it hints that somewhere down the line there's going to be a more interaction between you and your former family.
Right, and, you know, one of the things I've heard from the majority of my fans, you know, in mail, you know, like through the mail or in person, is that they love the family dynamics, you know, with Joy and Reggie being my sister. And it's very true. It's kind of heartwarming, but at the same time, it's very dark and depressing, but it's a good contrast, you know, because it kind of evens itself out. And I mean, I would love to be able to reconcile with my mother at one point, but right now she's so believing that I'm just some psycho girl who keeps coming to her house and stalking them. So I couldn't really tell you right now as to whether or not they will or will not.
No, but I think there's so much dysfunction in real life in America that actually that isn't all that unusual, one way or the other, for a lady to be that unhappy.
You know, right? You know what's interesting, Art, is talking about, you know, the family dynamic in this show. When we first started it, we certainly never looked at this as a family show. But if you go on, you know, several of the websites, both ours, Showtime's, as well as the fan-created ones, so many people write in, both older people and younger people, that this is the one show they can sit down as a family and watch, because the older people get a real insight as to how honestly young people are thinking and vice versa.
That's right.
I think today family viewing, because of all the niche programming, has become, you know, really sort of a lost, you know, event for the family, and this is one that's bringing them together.
Interesting, as it would seem. Hank, Ellen, hold tight for a moment. We're at the bottom of the hour. Ellen Muth, star of Showtime's Dead Like Me. Hank Cohen, president of MGM Television. That's quite a duo to have on, huh? Of one of my favorite programs. I'm a giant fan.
Find out more about tonight's guest. Log on to coasttocoastam.com. Code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Dead Like Me is about a young lady, beautiful young lady. In this case, Ellen Muth, who plays Georgia, who gets hit by a re-entering toilet seat, re-enters the atmosphere and kills her, and instead of dying completely, well, actually she does die, she becomes a reaper, and her assignment is to take others' souls, other people's souls, just before they die, in generally horrific, and if they can be funny, and they are funny, deaths of others. So she reaps souls. We'll get back to Ellen and Hank Cohen, who's president of MGM Television Entertainment, in just a moment. Stay right there. Once again, Hank Cohen, president of MGM Television, and Ellen Muth, star of Dead Like Me. Hello again, you two. Hank.
Yes.
Why Showtime? I think, to me, it almost has to be on Showtime, where you can get away with the language, and some of the languages kind of are rated, but that makes it work too, doesn't it?
I think it does. I think it gives us certain freedoms to explore areas and have the realistic talk that I think people relate to.
Well, you couldn't be doing that on ABC or NBC or CBS or even Fox.
No, I think we could do the show, but I don't think we could do the show that we're doing right now.
It would not be as real, would it, Ellen?
Not at all. I mean, it's interesting you would ask that, because a lot of people have asked me that question, you know, why not the WB or Fox? And I said, you know, basically a lot of the things that happen in our show, you can't show on regular network TV. And a lot of people, you know, like my grandmother would say, I can't watch you because you swear too much. and it's kind of funny, but a lot of it is, necessary for the sense of humor that the scene is set in.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Hank, there have been introduction of different nameless reapers in certainly in the first season, like, for example, the man who reaped George's soul. Then the kid. Remember the kid? That was really interesting. The kid who reaped the animal souls.
Right.
And I'm wondering if you're going to follow that theme some more in future seasons. Do you think that far ahead?
Yeah, they absolutely do. When they, I will say this season, when they came into my office before we even went into production, they had the whole, obviously not everything, you know, all the scripts written, but they had the whole season sort of arced out. And that is absolutely in the plans to continue to, you know, even perhaps occasionally revisit ongoing reapers, or create and of course introduce some new ones. Now we couldn't go back to the reaper that took George because he crossed over.
Yeah, once you reap your last soul,
that's why George became a reaper.
Yeah, in soap operas, when a character is deleted, they merely murder them, or I don't know, they die or something. But in this case, they just pass on over, right?
They just pass on over.
Yeah.
Ellen, as your role develops, I mean, you were taken really early in your life, just
you
as
think?
You were developed. Yeah, I think. And so I wonder if you will develop physical relationships, perhaps even at some point losing your astral virginity.
You know what's really interesting about that is I was thinking, I'm the youngest one of the reapers, and we're not supposed to age at all. And I was thinking, you know, right now I'm 23 years old. What's going to, you know, if the show keeps going, what's going to happen once I reach, like, 25? I'm not going to look like I look anymore. And,
Oh, you'll hang in for a while.
I hope so.
Well, that's another thing. It is a huge hit. And I guess, how did it go, Hank? Did it start off with a roar, or was it more likely certain people began discovering it as it went along?
I think a little of both. I mean, we came out of the box very strongly, and, you know, we've continued to grow. We're doing, you know, very, very good and strong numbers right now. And it is a show that you can't say is across the board for everybody, because there are certain people, a very, very small percentage, hopefully, that would just make them too uncomfortable to watch it. But I will tell you, when you go on the websites, and as I said before, I'm proud of all our shows, but you see what people write about this. This is a deep, deep emotional connection to this show.
Yeah.
I was actually pretty blown away, Art, when we were down at Comic-Con, the big comic book convention, a couple months ago in San Diego, and Ellen and a couple of the cast members were on the panel, and I was moderating it. People were standing up, and it was almost like a revival. I mean, they were talking about life's experiences. One woman, and I was really moved by this, she said after she watched the pilot, she went right to the phone and called her mother, and she hadn't talked to her in 15 years, and told her mother, you know what, we have to stop this fight.
Is it sobering for you, Ellen, to realize how deeply this affects people, just as Hank's saying?
It really is unusual, because the majority of fan mail that I get, they all say how I've helped them because their mother passed on or their father passed on.
That's right.
And that's the most rewarding part about it to me. It's not the, I mean, I love doing the performing, but when I get letters like that, that's the most rewarding.
Well, I guess there's a lot that has come before Dead Like Me for you, but this certainly gives you a big public footprint. So you're somewhere in New England, aren't you, Ellen?
I'm in,
Connecticut or something?
Yeah.
When you go out now, do you get recognized a lot?
I do, actually. It seems like, more so this year than last year, but I've found I can't, it's funny, my dad uses the term busted, and it seems like anytime I go out, you know, somebody will come up to me and say, you look just like the girl from Dead Like Me.
Oh, they say that.
If my father's with me, he'll always be like, it is her, don't you want her out of that? And if I'm by myself or with a friend, I say, oh, really?
Do any of them ask you if you could really reap them?
Yeah, the funny thing is, it's like, I'm like, you don't want to shake my hand.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a good answer.
Yeah.
Hank, we're in, the second season is playing now?
It is, and the first season is out on DVD and doing very well.
And Does it look like the ratings will sustain 3 and 4? I mean, how far ahead do you look?
You know, Showtime has been a great supporter of the show, and in everything that they tell me, they're very, very happy with the show. We're certainly, if not the highest rated, we're one of their highest rated shows, and the numbers just continue to grow, and they're solid. So I have to be positive and hopeful for season 3.
I am too. I do too,
because I need to move to Malibu.
you're really going to move to Malibu, huh?
No, I wish.
So then you live back east, but then what? Do you have to fly west to do the series?
In Vancouver, yeah.
All the way to Vancouver, huh?
Right. Up and over.
By the way, you two, are the Gravelings, these creatures that precipitate the deaths of these folks, these Gravelings, they're put in by computer afterwards, aren't they?
Yeah.
How does that work? That's right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they are, and I would just like to add that I think our visual effects, and created, you know, by our visual effects people, the Gravelings are, they were nominated for an Emmy, and we will find out how we do tomorrow night at the Creative Arts Awards.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
And while we're on the subject, the music. Oh, my God,
also nominated for, and we'll find out tomorrow night, how Stuart Copeland comes out of the music.
I was just about to say that.
Well, you know, that's, where, of course, where I picked up Matisse and Boomba from, actually, I think two separate episodes it was used.
I think it's actually been in 3.
Has it been in 3?
Yeah.
Really? It's just the right mood for the program. It's just...
Yeah, you know, it was amazing when Boom Boom Ba, when we first came out, I think it was like the 5th episode or something like that, the websites went crazy, people asking, what is that song? What is that song? So people started posting before they even ended and said, okay, the song is Boom Boom Ba by Matisse, and then they'd get on to the rest of it because so many people asked about that song.
It's still...
By the way, the company that put that out, Matisse is a British group, I think, right, Ellen?
Yeah.
They did a re-release on the DVD, and they did better sales when they re-released that DVD than when they had initially come out with it.
That's the power of the program.
Yeah.
Wow.
In fact, this year we have a guest star who's a musician, and I've been seeing him all over the place now, because at the time that I had met him, I didn't really know who he was. And it seemed like a week later he's on MTV and Carson Daly and all these big-time shows, and...
Yeah, that's right, Art. His name is Gavin DeGraw, and we do.
Yeah, I didn't know if I could say that or not.
Oh, sure you can say it. Sure you can.
Yeah, sorry if we're supposed to, but we did it. We're doing a big tie-in. It starts. I think it starts next month or next week, on with MTV and Gavin, because music has become such an important part of this show, and
it is.
All that credit goes to, well, John Mace is our executive producer, of course, but Stuart Copeland, who writes this wonderfully imaginative music in a program that music really does sometimes help shape the mood for what the actors are doing.
Does it ever.
You know, I'm sure everyone who's listening has seen the making of a film, and they show the rough cut where you don't see the music or you don't hear the music, and it really does affect you emotionally, because you find if you take the music away, the scene is completely different. I mean, I've seen director's cut and producer's cut of the show, which is before the special effects and before the music, and you just don't feel as much as you do if there's music in the background.
That's right. That's right. Your role, Ellen, is so strong, and the show's becoming so strong. Strong. It's a strong...
Oh, strong.
Strong, yeah, strong role. And in other words... I'm wondering if you are at all concerned, if it goes on for years and years, which it looks like it will, that forever you're going to be a Reaper, typecast as a Reaper.
Well, I've never seen any, like, other scripts where there's a Reaper. In fact, when I first got this role, I had to ask my father, what is a Grim Reaper?
really?
So, I don't think it's possible to be typecast as that. I mean, I've been in situations where, you know, the media says, she always plays a victim in most of her, you know, projects. But I firmly believe that only you can typecast yourself, because basically it's up to you whether or not you want to take on a role. And if you continue to take victim roles or reaper roles...
Do you make a good victim?
What's that?
Do you make a good victim?
Yeah.
She really does. But you know, I want to take a shot at that question also. She is an amazingly, extraordinarily talented actress, and I don't think there will be any sort of residual or hangover effect on her career at all. I think she will go on to, you know, play, you know, wonderfully diverse roles and nail all of them.
It's just that it's such a strong imprint in my mind now who she is. That happens. Hank, are there any other films or TV series that MGM is going to produce in the future that might focus on the metaphysical phenomena? I don't know, time travel, psychokinesis, telekinesis, shape-shifting, the craft.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny. We've sort of become the sci-fi studio. You know, we did The Outer Limits. We do Stargate SG-1 and Stargate Atlantis. We just did My Little Area got to produce a direct-to-video Species 3, you know, which is going to be coming out in, I think it's coming out in November.
Oh, yes.
Follow-up to the first two Species movies.
Oh, yes, indeed.
We did the Carrie remake, which everybody, you know, said was brave, if nothing else, that we did for NBC last year. So, yeah, we really do. We seem to have an interest in it, and we've sort of found a niche for ourselves. And, yeah, I can tell you there will definitely be more of them.
All right.
I'm glad to hear that.
You are, too, huh?
What's that?
I say you are too. Listen, how would you feel about reaping a talk show host one of these days?
Well, it won't be you, so.
I would, no, listen.
Ellen, he didn't mean for real, he meant on the show.
Yeah.
Oh.
See how seriously you're taking that role?
Exactly. You got to watch what you say to her, she's always a reaper.
No,
I think that's a great idea, Art.
I would be honored to be reaped by George. Would you?
Reaped by me.
Yeah. Did you ever imagine you'd fall into this kind of a role? I mean, from being a victim to suddenly this is so out in left field.
Well, I don't really think of it as being like falling into it, because it was the type of thing where I read the script and I thought, okay, this is brilliant, so there's no way I'm going to get it. And I still, to this day, and according to my mother, a lot of actors say in interviews that they think this was a mistake. You know, somebody made a mistake somewhere hiring me because it's so good.
Oh, no, you're perfect.
She is perfect, and I can tell you that, not personally, but our casting people, Paul Weber, who I think put together just an amazing cast on the show, he looked at probably between 400 or 500 girls, and you know, we saw George, and Ellen, and we said, there, you know, there's George.
Happens to you too.
Yes, it does.
Well, again, you know, I see her as I said, a sort of pouty, reluctantly rebellious reaper, and she's got a certain aura of kind of rebellious poutiness about her that I don't know where else you'd find it. Yeah, except unless it was kind of real in her life.
Yeah, well, she was, you know, pouty and had trouble with authority before she died. You know, look at her family dynamics. She didn't get along with her mother or her father.
Uh-huh.
And she never wanted to be told what to do. And I guess that's one thing I can relate to.
That's what I thought. You talk about it in the third person because, of course, it's a character, but there really has to be a lot of that in your life. Can you be such a good actress that you could be something totally different? It doesn't seem like it to me.
No, absolutely you can. I mean, as long as you're aware of your surroundings and you can make sense of things that other people are going through, I think that's one of the unique talents that an actor can have, you know, being able to analyze and see how other people live. And that's why I'm really fortunate that I didn't grow up in Hollywood or in New York with people in my family who are in the business, you know, because nobody in my family is in the business. So I grew up, you know, in a normal high school, not a performing arts. It was just a local high school.
Well, so then how did all this happen to you then?
I don't know. I think I was chosen. No. It was actually something, ever since I was a little girl, I used to make, like, home movies and music videos and dance videos and all these things. And I just realized that recently, wow, I've really been performing since I was a little girl. And getting into this, it was, like I told my father, I wanted to do it. And my mom didn't want me to because she thought the rejection would lower my self-esteem.
Really?
And, yeah. But my father helped me follow through with it.
So she thought it was doomed.
Yeah. I mean, it was kind of a thing where it's the untouchable. You know, it doesn't really happen to you. It happens to people who you don't know.
But your dad was for it.
Yeah. He was very supportive.
Well, it's... You know,
I'm glad your dad won that fight.
Yeah.
I know, me too.
It seems to me like this show just, I don't know, it's special, it's magic, and it's so different. And those are the shows in television, I guess, that really do take off. I'm remembering All in the Family, for example, and a whole lot of shows that, you know, reached out and were just sort of dangerous on the edge, but they're the ones that made it, and that's what Dead Like Me is doing. It's right out there on the very edge.
Yeah, and you know, I really commend Showtime and MGM for being so supportive of putting this show on the air, because it's a very touchy subject, and you're going to find people who are absolutely opposed to it.
Has there ever been a moment in the program, Ellen, where you said, "We can't do this"?
No. You know why? 'Cause I don't know. The type of person that I am, I'm really willing to try anything, as long as it's not going to kill me. And George is already dead, so there's no reason for her to be afraid.
You know, Art, it's funny you should say that. The only time we would say, no, we can't do this, is we think it's too predictable or too corny.
Way to go. You never get anywhere by copying, and you two are big originals. So Hank Cohen, Ellen Muth, thank you both so very much for being here. And if you ever want to reap a talk show host,
we know where to look.
Yeah, here I am. You two take care.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
All right, there you have it. What an honor for me. What a privilege for me. You can imagine. I mean, you have a lot of favorite shows, right? What if you were a talk show host and you got to interview the star of your favorite show? Well, that's how it just was for me. It's called Dead Like Me, and it's on Showtime. If you haven't caught it yet, catch it. I'm Art Bell from the High Desert. We'll be right back.
At area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Well, this may be a piece of breaking news, and I hope it's not what I think it might be, but it may be the North Koreans have set off a nuke. Maybe they've lit off a nuke. I don't know. Associated Press is saying a large explosion, has occurred in the northern part of North Korea, sending a huge mushroom cloud into the air on an important anniversary of the communist regime, according to the South Korean news agency. The South Korean government said that it was trying to confirm the report. That's South Korea. The Yonhap News Agency, citing an unidentified source in Seoul, said the explosion occurred at 11 a.m. local time Thursday in the province near the border with China. The blast has left a gigantic crater big enough to be noticed by satellite. Now, we really don't know at this point whether it was a deliberately planned nuclear test or it's been some sort of nuclear accident in North Korea. At this point, we're not sure. But I'll try and keep you informed, and hopefully you'll keep me informed. That came sailing in on Fast Blast. Thank you very much. One way of staying in touch with what's going on while I'm actually on the air. But it could be that, or it could be a big accident in North Korea. Just wanted to kind of keep you up on things. In a moment, Tom Kasmer, and this is going to be a very interesting program. He's a real deal. I was invited to call Mr. DeLorean, you know, the man who makes the cars, who had something to say about Tom Kasmer, but just based on that invitation alone, I didn't take the opportunity and call Mr. DeLorean. But he is apparently prepared to accept some technology, I guess, that Tom has designed for an automobile Mr. DeLorean's working on. Anyway, Tom Kasmer is about to be here. Now, as a child, Tom Kasmer was fascinated by mechanisms and rockets. My kind of guy. He attended a technical high school and then joined IBM Endicott in the Electronic Technician Apprentice Program after about 2 years. He entered Harper College in Binghamton, New York. During the period from 59 to 63, he designed and patented, listen to this, IBM's HydraPad drill machine logic, electronics, and optics. The machines have drilled all holes in IBM circuit boards worldwide to date. Can you imagine that? The kind of holes that are drilled for IBM have to be, of course, very precise. And so he invented the technology that does this, even till this very day. While at Bendix Scintilla Ignition Lab, he refined a rocket ignition that went to the moon on the LEMS. He's been involved in several company startups, acting as chief engineer and vice president of engineering. Later, he began work as a freelance consultant working on military radar, nuclear survivable power supplies, cryogenics, reliability studies, and power supplies. In 1986, he contracted with a military contractor in Minnesota and designed a 1 million-watt power supply for the Star Wars program and built a 150-kilowatt section of it before Congress canceled Star Wars. Oh, yeah, that's right. They threw water on all that. Right? Well, sort of. At this point, he came to the realization that his experience, education, and background qualified him to design and build the world's first true solar sports car, the Mag 1. After 5 years, he was advised by a business associate to incorporate and capitalize on the core invention in there. That would be the Hydrister. The Hydrister, and we're going to get an explanation of that shortly. Now, again, Hurricane Ivan, down to 910 millibars, is one of the biggest, baddest hurricanes in all of history, down at 910 millibars. This thing is gigantic, and if you want to see how really, really big it is, I just changed my webcam photo to a satellite view of Ivan. The hole is, you know, the eye of Ivan is so well defined and so exactly round and so devoid of anything in the middle that you can look down through the eye and see ocean. It's such a powerful storm, it's hard to imagine, and of course it's bearing down now on an island, on the Cayman Islands. Pray for the people in the Cayman Islands. 165 miles an hour and still building. They're really going to need your prayers. In a moment, Tom Kasmer, stay right where you are. How quickly news moves. All right, Ramona just grabbed this for me from CNN. It says North Korea cloud, not a nuclear blast. Seoul, South Korea. A large cloud that appeared over North Korea in satellite images several days ago was not the result of a nuclear explosion, according to U.S. officials. South Korea's news agency is reporting that a huge explosion shook North Korea's northernmost province on Thursday, producing, get this, a mushroom cloud over 2 miles wide. So, as a quick follow-up to what I said, it appears it's not a nuclear blast, but there is a crater there and a two-mile-wide something that happened. So we just don't know at this point, and I'll try and keep you informed. Here is Tom Kasmer. Tom, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Art.
Would you classify yourself as an inventor? Would that be appropriate?
Well, I've been calling myself that for a while.
Okay. All right, so an inventor. You've invented something called the Hydrister, and I guess we're going to talk about that in a moment. But again, I had an invitation to call, you know, Mr. DeLorean, and talk about you. And I was told that Mr. DeLorean is prepared to accept or incorporate something that you have invented in a car design that he's got coming up, or what?
That's correct.
Okay.
It is a form of the Hydrister, which will connect the engine to the wheels.
It'll connect the engine to the wheels?
And it'll do so in a variable manner.
Oh, boy, have we got a bad phone connection here, Tom.
Okay,
maybe
is that better?
A little bit. Yeah, you're going to have to stay right into that phone. It's not a good one. Where are you located?
Well, currently I'm in a Best Western hotel in Sturbridge, Mass., at the courtesy of the management here.
Oh, oh, no kidding. All right.
I'm traveling, and I had to find someplace to call you from a landline.
I see. Okay. Well, it's cool. We'll get by with it. Can you tell, remembering now, this audience is, it's not made up of engineers. Is there a way to explain to non-engineers what a Hydrister is?
I will make my best effort.
All right.
Okay. The Hydrister is based on what is called a dual pressure-balanced vane pump. The kind you would find, for example, in the power steering pump of a car.
Okay.
There is a rotor with radially moving vanes that go in and out as the rotor turns, and the design of the power steering pump is something that would have a like an elliptical chamber in it. So as the rotor and vanes turn, the vanes will track the elliptical surface of the hole in this housing.
Boy, you might be losing me. Or I'm getting lost here. I'm still not grasping what it is. This word is made up from two words, right?
Correct. I made the word up from hydraulic and transistor.
Okay, so you made the word up.
I did.
So it half of it's transistor, and I know what the function of a transistor or the various functions I guess are. And I'm trying to put it together with the rest. So it's a transistor and what?
A hydraulic for the function of moving fluid around, and transistor for the function of controlling the movement. In other words, with a transistor, a regular electrical transistor, you can have several cases. You can have it on or off like a switch.
That's right.
Which happens in computer logic. Or you can have the transistor turn on to varying degrees, kind of like slipping a clutch in a car to hold the car on the hill.
Okay, so what you've invented then controls by nature the hydraulics. Is that what we're talking about?
That's correct. It enables you to control a hydraulic, a variable, adjustable hydraulic connection between, let's say, a turning shaft
mm-hmm.
and another shaft which you would like to control the movement of.
Okay.
Think of it as a lever and a fulcrum.
All right. And how is Mr. DeLorean going to use it? And what, do you can you tell us about anything about his plans, by the way, for a new car while we're at it?
Well, he hasn't shared a lot of that with me, and I don't feel that I should overly question him. He's kind of built one car and made 7,700 examples of it, and I respect his ability.
All right.
I hope he wants to do it again.
So he's getting older, but he's going to do it again, huh?
Sharp as a tack. He called me after he had read my three existing patents from front to back. The third patent is 87 pages long, most of which I wrote. And he had an immediate grasp of the hydrister. So he may be a few years older than I am, but I'll tell you, he is really a one sharp individual. Very sure.
It's fascinating that he's going to take off and do it again. Anyway, you've worked in a lot of areas, rockets, for example, and you actually designed something that went to the moon on the LEMS.
That had to do with a circuit that I was presented with while I was at Bendix as a summer student, and there were something like 38 components in that circuit, and because of the need to have the circuit operate at a very cold temperature, about 160 degrees centigrade below zero, the circuit would not function, and it wouldn't start the rocket, therefore. So I was able to cut it down to seven components, and it would start at 190 degrees below zero.
Wow.
Centigrade.
Yeah. Which is, I guess, exactly what they need for space, the vacuum and the cold of space, huh?
Yes.
And how do you get to the position where you're doing that kind of work? I mean, that's wild stuff. Were you actually designing for that, or did you happen to be designing something that fit that application, and then bump?
Right. The reason I got the summer job at Bendix is that at the time I was the proud owner of a brand new Corvette split window coupe.
Mm-hmm.
And in the businesses I was involved in, I was able to access the machine shop and all that sort of thing. I had been working on the testing of a brand new invention from General Electric in Auburn, New York, called the SCR, the Silicon Control Rectifier. This is 1962.
Mm-hmm.
And I tinkered around with the idea of it, and I came up with the capacitive discharge ignition system on my own. And I also didn't like the problems associated with the mechanical points in a car, so I concepted and built a mechanical trigger, similar to what they have today in cars, where there's no points, but it's a mechanical impulse trigger with a distributor.
Okay.
So I had built all this, and I had it on my Corvette. Then I went up for the summer job, and I ended up in the parking lot with Dr. Morris, the PhD physicist who headed the lab, and I showed him what I was working on, and I was hired on the spot. So later on this summer, I was presented with this idea, because I always got myself in a situation where I said I could do it. In other words, when presented with a job, no matter how tough it was, I took a look at it, and I said, I can do this. You know, kind of like the little engine that could.
Sure.
And I just stayed at it until I finally accomplished something. I hadn't always been successful, but with most of the things I've taken on, it's been that sort of thing.
I take it for you, this probably began as a child. Most people who are inventors are doers of different things, and so it must have started as a child. I mean, I'm sure you were ripping stuff apart as a kid, weren't you?
I had an uncle who had all sorts of goodies in his basement, clocks and radios and all that sort of thing. I would talk him out of something and carry it to my mother's house about 3 miles away. And I would go out and back in the chicken coop, which was no longer occupied by the chickens. And I had my lab set up. And I would work on things.
Your lab, huh?
Kid.
Really? No large explosions and craters, I
heard. No.
All right. You have a number of ideas about, and since you've done so much that's been successful, you're really particularly worthy of asking this. The sun is probably the source of most, one way or the other, of most of the energy on Earth. And we're running real short of energy on Earth right now, Tom. Do you have some thoughts on capturing the sun's energy to a greater degree than we do now, and we really, we get energy pretty soon or the world's in desperate straits.
I do have it, and I think I see another way to approach this. Now, the heat, actually the sun puts heat in the air as well as daylight during the day before it's visible.
You're very hard to hear, Tom.
Okay, I'm sorry. The sun puts heat into the air, heats the air up.
Right.
And, of course, that doesn't go away at night. It reduces a little bit the temperature because the heat radiates off into space. However, there's a lot of heat contained in the air. Now, there are commercial systems available called freon heat pumps. And a freon heat pump is a form of air conditioner which can be used to capture low-grade heat and direct it to a place of your choosing so you can do something with it.
How do you capture the heat from the air?
Well, you would have a radiator which exchanges the energy from the air into very cold freon. It warms up the freon, which then is circulated to a pump. The freon is compressed, and the compressed freon gets very hot because the same quantity of heat is forced into a much smaller volume and the temperature goes up. Sort of the basic nature of physics.
Okay. Tom, you're getting very hard to hear. I tell you, this phone line, the connection that we've got to this motel is not good. We may want to consider setting up another date to do this interview, and it's just that the average person is not going to be able to hear what you're saying very well, because I can barely hear it. I'm not sure what's wrong. I think it's maybe the motel's phone line. Where do you live, Tom, normally? I mean, where are you normally when you're not out at a motel somewhere?
Okay, I live in Binghamton, New York.
Okay, oh, okay, that got stronger. So we'll kind of monitor this phone line and see what happens here, but I'm a little concerned about it. So anyway, is there enough heat in the atmosphere to efficiently heat, and I guess that's the key word here, is the amount of efficiency and translation of heat you can get to energy, right?
Yes. Commercial heat pumps are used to replace, for example, electric heat in a home?
Yes.
Now, during a typical December in the Northeast, you might have a cost of about $900 to heat the house.
Uh-huh.
During, let's say, a month of December.
Yes, right.
You can install a heat pump and cut that bill to $300 for the same level of coldness and the heat in the house that you'd like.
Okay.
So that's called a coefficient of performance, or a COP, or a gain. And commercial heat pumps will give you a gain up to 3 times.
Oh.
Now, in a commercial heat pump, there is an element called an expansion valve, which merely amounts to a tiny hole or orifice.
Uh-huh.
In which the freon is expanded.
Okay. Listen, hold on. We're here at the bottom of the hour.
Okay.
And so just hang tough for a second, and we'll be right back. Only in America do you get phone connections like this, actually. So we're going to have a talk with Tom and redial the number and see if we can get it connected properly or something. It may be the motel's phones. Only in America.
Want to time travel? Go back to past shows on Streamlink. Sign up online at coasttocoastam.com. Talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is indeed, and we could not get a good line with Tom Kasmer, so we're going to reschedule the interview, and we're going to do some open lines. We just called back and had actually a worse line than we had the first time. So I guess maybe a little work on the switchboard there or something. I don't know. Anyway, we'll reschedule that interview. In the meantime, you know what we'll do? We'll talk. That's right. Open lines. You have to be, when you're a talk show host, you have to be somewhat able to proceed with anything that comes up. And I am, so we'll do it. A South Florida businessman says he's going to try to reduce the strength of Hurricane Ivan. By the way, have you seen the webcam picture of Ivan? Holy smokes, is that a just a monster. Now, I know I'm a weather nut, and I spend a lot of time watching the tropical updates at 50 minutes past the hour on the Weather Channel. I'm just nutty like that, but this one's incredible, incredible. And so here's this businessman who says he's going to try to reduce the strength of Hurricane Ivan, get this, folks, by flying a Boeing 747 into the edge of the hurricane and dumping thousands of pounds of an absorbent material into Ivan. Peter Cordani of Jupiter, I guess Jupiter, Florida, plans to try to knock the storm down by one or maybe two categories by dropping tons of powder that absorbs 3,000 to 4,000 times its own weight. So they're going to try and absorb it away. He's chief operating officer of Dynamat, a company that sells environmental absorbent products such as mats for mechanics. He believes his product, SK-1000, would cause a shearing action and a 15-degree cooling of the storm. Isn't that interesting? He's been working on his plan for 5 years now, has assembled a team of experts, including two former astronauts, moonwalker Edgar Mitchell, really, and Scott McLeod, who's tested the lunar module. Wow. And then I got this, and I thought this would be worth our discussion perhaps a little bit. It was just an email from a listener, but it hit home. Dear Art, first it was the day after tomorrow. Ta-da. Our movie, right? The day after tomorrow about climate change. Then Suspect Zero about technical remote viewing. And you know who's in that, right? Of course. Ed Dames. And now the upcoming White Noise starring Michael Keaton about EVP, electronic voice phenomena. Have you heard about that movie? It's called White Noise. And it's about EVP. And Robert says, you know, I've got the impression that a lot of producers out there are looking at what's popular on Coast to Coast AM and then decide what their next move ought to be. And, well, it's kind of true, isn't it? What gets discussed on this program inevitably, lately, seems to show up on the big screen. He's right, the day after tomorrow. We've been on that for years, and no less on it right now. By the way, Suspect Zero, Ed Dames, big movie, right? And it is a big movie, incidentally. And now, White Noise, which is about electronic voice phenomena. As you know, I have guests all the time who bring recordings to us that, and I've listened very carefully, and these recordings are too good not to be the real McCoy. They are the real McCoy. These are voices from somewhere else. Dare I say the other side? Well, my guests do, and I think it probably is the other side, but it could be another dimension. It could be a lot of things, but it does seem like it's the voice of the dead we're hearing. And now, a movie called White Noise about the voice of the dead. Voices, make it plural. We'll be right back. Open lines, coming right up. Anything you want to talk about, fair game. New York Times, atomic activity in North Korea raises concerns. Washington, September 11. President Bush and his top advisors have received intelligence reports in recent days describing a confusing series of actions by North Korea that some experts believe could indicate the country's preparing to conduct its first test explosion of a nuclear weapon. So, you know, this explosion, I know they're saying non-nuclear, but you put that together with the New York Times story here, and you've got to wonder, I wonder what they've done, or did they have some awful, horrible accident there? By the way, somebody says, hey, Art, your webcam shows a toad. Well, it did show a toad. Now it shows, if it's caught up, the latest satellite photograph of Ivan. This is an incredible, incredible hurricane. So check it out. That's all the way from the satellite. It gives you kind of a humbling feeling when you look at the size of this godforsaken monster storm. And you look at the land and you look at the storm and you look at the land and you say, holy mackerel. This thing's about to hit the Caymans, which are virtually a dot compared to any of what you're seeing there. Can you even imagine being on an island and having something like that bearing down on you? Holy mackerel. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Art, first time caller, profound honor.
thank you. It's an honor to have you here. Where are you?
This is Bob in Cottage Grove, Oregon.
All right.
Just a thought that the first episode of Dead Like Me was found by accident, and as I was watching it, I thought there's enough firemen, ambulance attendants, nurses, and policemen that'll probably make the thing go regardless of who else likes it.
God, it's an incredible program. I love it. I absolutely love it. So you've been watching since number one?
Yes, yeah. I'm hooked.
Well, then, you know, you can imagine then how I felt. You know, I kind of was in awe. It's probably not good for me to be in awe of those I interview, but I couldn't help it. I mean, she's really something else in that program.
She's a sleeper.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be a monster, and more people are going to catch on to it. You watch.
I'm glad it's coming out on DVD.
Me too.
Thank you.
All right, buddy. Take care. Yes, indeed. Just an amazing, amazing concept. You know, the whole conceptual thing about Dead Like Me is so different, so very different and intriguing. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Pretty well, sir. Where are you?
This is Dustin in Ontario, listening on AM 800 CKW.
Yes, sir.
I just want to ask you, why did you get into radio?
Say the question again. Did you say why?
Yeah.
Why did I get into radio? Ha, 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 ha. All right, if your radio's on in the background, turn it off. That's a hard question. I thought you were going to say, how did you get in? Why did I get into radio? Oh, God. I don't know. It's like my whole life was radio, sir. From the moment I was old enough to start ripping stuff apart, you know, electronics and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's like my whole life was radio. And my whole life has been radio. So I don't know how to answer that. It's like I couldn't have done anything else.
Okay.
I'm sorry, that's going to have to serve as an answer. I hope it's a satisfactory one to you, but there, you know, now that I go back in my life and I look, I couldn't have done anything else. I have been so wrapped into every single aspect of radio, both the electronic side and the mic side, every side of radio. I've just been immersed in it all my life. And I can't even imagine doing anything else, so it's not like I grew up, you know, and got to a certain age and said, well, I think I'll go into radio. It was already decided. You know, it was just already happening. So that's almost impossible to answer, the why of it. Huh. International Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Pretty well, sir. What is your first name?
James.
All right, welcome to the program, and what's up?
Okay, well, considering Ivan and all these hurricanes that are recently in the news, I was thinking that maybe HAARP had something to do with it. If it hadn't, maybe there's a way to use HAARP to defuse these hurricanes.
Well, there's a million questions in this one. Do you think that HAARP is a weather control mechanism?
I think it has the power to do things of that nature. I don't know how HAARP works.
They've kind of admitted that. So, you know, that one possible aspect of it might be weather control. So I wonder if they try. I wonder, with something this catastrophic, like Ivan, Category 5, headed for somewhere in the U.S., you know, and if it hit as strong as it is right now, there would be a real catastrophe, sir. So this would be considered emergency conditions, I would think.
It would be a good testing ground to see if they could stop it.
Well, right. But it's going to go somewhere, and I wonder if they could actually cause it to lessen in intensity or turn it toward some other unlucky people, or what would they do?
Maybe they can just turn it back to the sea, or where, you know, or some.
How about make it go around in circles until it poops out?
Yeah.
You know what, actually, we're laughing at that, but that might be the thing to do, because, you see, hurricanes are a way of the Earth balancing out some heat problems that it has. That's what hurricanes actually do. They balance things out. So it's like if you stopped them, you'd be fooling with Mother Nature in
Absolutely.
Ways that you ought not, perhaps. But making it go round and round and round in the ocean until it pooped out, that might work.
Well, with any luck, like I'd hope that somebody might give it a try to defuse some of this, because it's causing more than enough havoc.
Well, again, diffusing it might be fooling with Mother Nature, because then you wouldn't have that balance achieved. But running it around in circles, that might work.
Maybe create a field of some kind that would make it do that.
All right. That's a very interesting thought. And by the way, I certainly cannot say that it's HAARP, but there is a mysterious signal that's been appearing in the 7 megahertz region, about 7230, actually, and it's a strange signal. Again, I'm not suggesting it's HAARP, but it's HAARP-like in some ways. Instead of being a single carrier, for those of you who follow this kind of thing, it's several signals appearing on this frequency. And HAARP, indeed, has been very active. We've been recording it. You should hear some of the weird sounds. I'm sorry I don't have a recorded bit of HAARP here for you. But, boy, it makes some odd sounds. I'll tell you what. I'll do that. I'll record HAARP for you and bring it in. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hi, Art. It's Nancy calling.
Hi, Nancy.
How you doing?
Pretty good. Where are you?
Central Massachusetts right now.
All right.
So I was wondering, had you made it through all of Dad's QSL cards?
Say that again?
I sent you the package of Dad's old
Oh, my God, yes. Oh, my God, yes. I've got them. They're incredible. And you know what? I'm not so sure that you should have let go of those. Some of those are historic, and I think they may belong, you know, like with the ARRL or some organization that would, you know, some of them are so old and so rare that they ought to be preserved by more than just an individual like me.
Well, I couldn't think of anybody else better to send them to than to you.
Believe me, I'm honored. Very honored, but some of those, and what she sent is her dad's, it was your dad, right?
Yes.
Your dad's QSL cards. It goes back to sort of the beginning of radio. I mean, some of these were back to about the Spark days, and these are cards that ham radio operators send each other to confirm a contact or even just hearing a station. And some of these are absolutely historic, and this young lady sent them to me, so I'm honored. But again, I may end up giving some of them to somebody who will preserve them in a museum.
That would be fine, Art.
So thank you for sending them, but I don't know. I want to discourage people from sending keepsakes. Anyway, thank you. Anything else?
Well, I wanted to talk about two instances that happened in the past.
Okay.
And see what you think about them.
All right.
Back in the... it was either the late fall of 97 or the spring of 98.
Mm-hmm.
I was standing in the kitchen up at the house and looking out the back window into a field, and I saw these men all in black going into the corner of the field, and they had dug up something.
Really?
They had it. Yep. They had it in a black box.
Oh, my God.
Yep. They carried it across the field back over to all black vehicles.
Yes.
There were black vans and black, you know, like SUVs, and left. And after that, I went outside and I asked neighbors, I said, did you see, you know, those people?
Right.
And like, and it was like, no. Now that was strange. I have no idea what they dug up. I have no idea who they were.
And you then, know, it's something you should have had a camera and taken a picture of. I mean, it's not every day men in black dig something up near you and take it away. Oh, my
no,
God.
No, it's not. And then the other instance was back probably in 75, I want to say, that there was a prototype system located in Berlin, Massachusetts.
Yes.
That developed, it was a hovercraft. It was a small unit. It looked like it had girders on it. It pulsated.
Something that would carry a person?
No, smaller than that.
Yeah.
Probably the size of a large screen TV set.
Okay.
And it could hover. It hovered across, I'd say maybe 300 units, you know, and above where they built cinder blocks. Hovered there and then went back. And now that place is no longer there. But they were a prototype place that developed things for different companies.
Yeah, that's pretty weird, all right. Thank you very, very much. And again, thank you for sending all of that. And she sent actually more than that, other mementos from her father's amateur radio station. It was pretty incredible. And so I'll be a good care person for them until I find a museum. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Art?
Yes.
Long time no speak. Wow, I got through.
Yes, you are through.
Thank you. I have a phenomenon in my head that's going on, which is it's voices in my head, but it's not, it's my actual thoughts, and it's verbalized.
You have thoughts?
It's not my conscience.
You have thoughts in your head.
But, I mean, it's not, it's actually my own thoughts. I can program it.
Well, we're all allowed to have our own thoughts, sir. If you didn't have thoughts, who would you be?
Right, right. I understand that, but, I mean, it's audible.
You mean out loud?
Well, yeah, and if I don't think about it, it doesn't occur, but it's there.
Wait a minute. Your thoughts are being verbalized outside your head out loud. Does anybody hear them but you?
Well, no, of course not. I don't have speakers attached to my head, if that's what you mean.
Well, I mean, it sounds like, you know, like a cartoon with a caption that comes out of the top of your head.
Well, I've talked to another talk show host about this, and he said it's normal, but it's not my conscience. It's not something that says right or wrong. I can control it. I can make it erotic, if you know what I mean. I mean, that's beneficial. I haven't, you know, used that in a while. But it's something that people say to me is normal, but I don't think it's normal. I don't think...
Why do you think you're abnormal?
Dr. Frankenstein. For
yeah,
that one.
That's right.
Marty Feldman. God rest his soul.
Yeah.
And, well, I mean, I don't think I am. I just like to think that other people are like me. But on the other hand, you know, my specialness... is, you know, different. But the thing is, I'm an insomniac naturally, you know, whether chemicals are involved or not, and...
You mean many times chemicals are involved?
Well, they have been involved.
I read between the lines here, being honest,
well,
right?
So to speak,
yes.
Or tweak. No, I've engaged in that activity, but it's been, you know, months and months, and it's not, it may be a byproduct of that, but because I just don't know what it is. You've never heard, none of your perfectly normal callers have said anything about this, because I'd like to think that it's a normal occurrence, but I guess it's not.
Well, I'm still not totally clear on what's happening here. You say...
I mean, literally, I can make up stories and stuff, and...
You know, most people can. It's called an imagination.
Right, and daydreaming, but it's not audible in your head. I mean, it's audible 24/7. It's just that if there's background noise, I can't really hear it, but it's there constantly. And I'd like to think I'm normal, but I just, you know, if anything else, just inspire one of your open-minded callers and your open lines to expound upon this or expand or whatever, because I'd like to think it's something that other people experience.
I heard sirens.
Oh, I live in Oceanside, California.
Are they coming? They're not coming to get you, ha-ha.
No, they're coming to take me away, ha-ha.
That's it. That's what it was. Oh, you've got your lyrics down, that's for sure. Remember that? They're coming to take me away, ha-ha. Well, be careful who you tell about the voices would be my advice or they will be coming to get you. As far as being abnormal, I don't know. I mean, you were just basically telling me you could control your own thoughts. That's not so abnormal. We'll be right back.
When you hold me in your arms so tight, you let me know everything's alright. Ah, hooked on a feeling, I'm high on believing that you're in love with me. Lips as sweet as candy, its taste is on my mind. Girl, you got me thirsty for another cup of wine.
To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Good morning, everybody. We're in open lines. You know, I'm curious, how many of you believe in an afterlife? Next week, I'm going to be interviewing one of the best afterlife guests anybody's ever had. And I've had some really, really good ones. I've had... There was a young lady I had on who I will never forget for as long as I live. She came on this program and gave us a graphic description of her after-death experience. And she did, in fact, clinically die. Oh, it was awful. Anyway, she gave us a description that it's just one of those things that chills you and stands the hair up on the back of your neck. And she gave one of those, and we've got another one coming up next Sunday. And, in fact, it's the same physician who's bringing this guest to us. These stories are amazing, and, you know, they're so consistent with people who die. Not all, but when we do get the stories, they're all consistent with each other. This one was just particularly chilling. I know some of you recall. All right, we're in open line, so if you have something of some cosmic importance that you would like to share with everybody, those are the relevant numbers. Our guest tonight, unfortunately, is going to have to be rescheduled. We could not get a good phone connection, which would launch me on another one of my tirades. Actually, it was not a cell connection in this case. It was a, you know, like a hotel connection, but... I'm not so sure that we did well breaking up the phone companies. I've had a lot of concern about that lately. We used to have such nice connections. Everybody had plug-in telephones. It was a good world for a talk show host. And then they invented cell phones. And then they broke up the phone company. I don't know if it was in that order. But either way, all of this happened and contributed to a general deterioration, and you can't hear the pin drop anymore. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes. Hi. This is Mike from Philadelphia, WPHT.
Hello, Mike.
Yes. One of the world's top volcano experts, Professor McGuire from London, is saying that the Yellowstone supervolcano probably will be going off soon and it will kill everything within 500 or 600 miles of it. So I think it's extremely important we try to find out when. So I just wonder if you could ask Major Ed Dames and maybe 8 or 10 other remote viewers and psychics their best estimate as to when so we could possibly try to save millions of lives.
Yeah, I've heard that if it did go off, if Yellowstone were to erupt the way it once did, that, you know, the number of people dead would be, as you suggest, you know, hundreds of miles and millions of people, and That's a chilly little subject. But, yeah, sure, it's a perfect subject for a remote viewer.
Yeah, so if you could ask a consensus of them, not only just Ed Baines, but Stephen Schwartz and a few others that you could get hold of and other psychics, if people could know when, you know, that might be a big help in saving millions of lives.
All right, now let me ask you a question. If I got 4 out of 5 of these remote viewers, let's say, to say, oh, my God, that guy's right. It's going to go. We see it. What would you do?
Well, if I live with them there, I'll take a vacation for a few weeks or a month.
You know, the point is you'd get out of Dodge.
Oh, absolutely. And then the others could store up, like, water and food that in case they get locked in by ashes, you know, whatever, that would lock them in. Then they could have enough water and food and batteries.
Buried in the ashes like the victims of Pompeii. Yes, all right. Yes, I've been hearing a number of things about Yellowstone, but the fact is, of course, we don't know when it's really going to go, do we? I suppose that would be the job of a visionary or a remote viewer. I should also, of course, and I would invite you, if you want to reminisce about 9/11, I wouldn't stop you from doing that this morning. However, I haven't said much about it yet, and I'll tell you why. I think, you know, it's worth a small discussion, perhaps, between us. What do you think? It is the anniversary of 9/11, or it was 14 minutes ago. And I saw the coverage on TV today. I've seen the pieces on CNN today of the airplanes going into the building. And in some ways, it's such a traumatic event for me, and I think for all of you. I don't know. I'd like you to share this with me. Is it true of you? When you saw these things, I turned away from it. I remember following every horrid instant of it as it went on in New York and the Pentagon. And I remember being glued to it, and for days and days I did not leave that coverage. But now, years later, for some reason, I can't get back into it. It's such a completely emotional issue for me that I can't review it. It's almost too painful to review. I wonder how the rest of you feel. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning.
Yeah, this is Steve from Windsor, Ontario. I'm on listening on CKLW also.
Yes, Steve. Glad to have you.
Okay. I'm not very happy with what's going on with SETI right now.
SETI?
Yeah.
Oh, SETI, SETI, yes. Let's talk about that.
We get a story from SETI that if they get a signal in the helium-hydrogen band, that it's more than likely going to be extraterrestrial.
Yes, that's correct.
Now, all of a sudden...
Well, let's be a little careful. What SETI has said is that frequency would be the most likely kind of marker frequency that an alien might use because everybody looks at it. So
right.
That's what they've said. So it'd be a likely frequency an alien might use.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, all of a sudden, they find a signal coming from that frequency.
Yep.
And they start, somebody releases the information about it, and suddenly they're making excuses as to why this signal can't be extraterrestrial.
I know. Now, I know. I've been reading every word.
I don't understand where the thinkers have gone from SETI. How hard would it be if there's an intelligent civilization out there that they could put a transmitter somewhere else that might be moving at the speed that this thing's moving at, away from, like they say, it's moving something like 10,000 miles per hour in one direction and then suddenly shifting.
Yes.
How hard would that be to put a radio transmitter up on top of another planet or on a moon that might be circling them at that speed?
I don't know. You're right, though, when you say that they're sort of throwing everything up, every red herring they can, about what else it might be. But then if you read the stories, at the same time, they say, you know, but it might be. You know, they're saying that. It might be.
And
so,
they've been listening to it for a year and a half or something?
Yeah, I know.
Something,
and word would get out right away, huh? Well,
I'm not very happy. I think they're trying to pull the wool over our eyes.
It was found, ostensibly it was said, by a SETI at home person.
Yeah.
Except it wasn't just one person. It was repetitive several times. And they're couching the whole thing in a whole lot of let's not get too excited about this yet, but...
I just don't understand why they're making excuses. I mean, there are so many possibilities of why that signal could be moving the way it is.
Quite true. All of it quite true. This is fascinating. I don't know if you've been following the SETI story, but I've mentioned it. In fact, I certainly read the story last week and knew about it the prior week and read a little something. But yes, they have detected a signal, and then they're sort of saying, well, no, it could be this, or it could be internal electronics in the telescope, some little noise generated in the telescope, or a lot of things. But an awful lot of people have now detected it. It's been, what, two or three times? And they're looking for six times before they declare a genuine excitement. It's a story worth following. And with regard to, Art, we'll get the information out right away, which is what Seth always told me, right? It's not exactly, or I guess Seth would argue, yes, it is. It's happening that way. See, they're running stories on it. Yes, but what kind of stories? West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hi, radio's beautifully going off. Art, this is Jason. I'm in Los Angeles, and I'm calling from the mighty, I'm listening to 640 FM, the mighty KFI.
Yes, of course. Welcome.
I got that out. Art, just before I... ask you to update me on something, and I will comment on the trauma, too. You know, something interesting you might enjoy, I worked on Contact.
On the movie Contact?
Yes, on the special effects, actually.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, I'm completely serious. It was my first job working for a division of Sony Pictures.
Well, you know that is, like, about one of my favorite movies, as you well know. God, what an incredible motion picture, yes.
And it was a really interesting experience working on it, I have to say. Very, very interesting.
What was the atmosphere like?
The atmosphere?
Yeah.
Well, it was charged with electricity because at that point in time, it was still really early in the effects business. Sony had just started this big digital entity, and people were working around the clock. There were people from all over the world working on this movie. And it was great for me because I used to get to watch the dailies on one of the first high-def television sets I ever saw.
No kidding.
They would play back like planet modeling and stuff. It was very, very interesting.
I love that movie.
It was great. And I got to work in Unix, which I really wanted to do.
Good.
It was fabulous.
All right.
Really enjoyed it. Thought you'd like to know about that.
Yes, sir.
You know what? I will tell you about trauma, but before you go, I would like you to tell me what's going on with the current from the antenna. And I'll just say about today, I felt really down and depressed. I'm in L.A. I'm involved in some litigation. I'm in discovery. You probably have an idea what that's like. It's pretty intense.
Yes.
And so I'm sitting here, and it was kind of interesting that you picked up my call. I was a little surprised because I was mindlessly dialing as I was doing research on the Internet.
Mindlessly dialing.
I had a pattern in my head.
Now, I've got a lot of information on the antenna, and not a lot, not as much as I ought to. For example, we just went through terrible storms here in the desert tonight. I was afraid to put on the headphones when I first came on the program.
Yeah,
we had lightning flying everywhere, you know, really a wild night. And my antenna, of course, is grounded out for fear of a bolt coming right in here to the room.
No kidding.
But even under normal time, sir, there remains voltage unexplained on my antenna, a very significant large amount of voltage, enough to knock you right on your butt, and we're going to explore that. I've got to get the right kind of instruments here and so on and so forth. But we're going to look into that, and trust me, I'll keep you informed.
Art, do you think that you found an over-unity device in your own backyard?
Yeah, that's pretty laughable, isn't it?
Not really. I think maybe you stumbled onto something. I think you're on the right track.
A lot of people approach me, and they ask me exactly that. And look, I don't know if there's enough current to really support anything or if I've stumbled into something that, you know, is sort of a partial thing, and maybe there's a much more efficient way to extract energy from the atmosphere with some variation of what I'm doing, but what I have, it proves something. I don't know what.
Well, figure out how to capture it. I mean, isn't that going to be the key?
That's one of the goals, but figuring out what it is and where it's coming from is like ahead of everything for me. I want to know where it's coming from.
Absolutely. I'm just like you. I would, too. Thanks for updating me on that. Let me just say that I felt blue and sad all day long, and my mind kept going back to 9/11, and it really, really did have an impact, and I truly believe that There's a group psychological aspect to the whole country feeling.
Man, there's something about it. When I watched the coverage and the airplanes going into the buildings on CNN earlier today, it's like I could only take about a minute of it, and
I
said, you know, this is too much. And so I'm just curious whether other people feel that way. Kind of like it's so emotional that when you see it, it's like.
Art, I haven't watched anything. I was only listening to the radio because I was working. But even that it's too evocative of. I just keep going back to that day, that morning when I heard about it from a call from a girlfriend of mine.
And
it was horrifying. She was horrified, and that just set me into it. And I saw it when the second plane went in, and it was just it's terrible. I mean, it's a terrible, terrible thing. And it's a very, very sad day to pass through it, but maybe it'll make us stronger by going through it every day, one step forward in the future.
I very much appreciate your call.
Thank you very much for taking
you.
Me.
And, you know, we should talk, perhaps we should talk about the current political situation in a sense. To me, it looks like Kerry's campaign is imploding. I wonder if you have that same sense. And he's campaigning on these war records and all the rest of it when, you know, we were in a discussion last night about this, and he's kind of imploding because he doesn't have much of a message. Kerry doesn't seem to have much of a message anyway, one that seems to be resonating with the people. And I wonder why he's not doing more of an anti-war campaign. I wonder why he's not challenging the president in that specific arena instead of arguing about old military records, which I don't think is going to move the American people one way or the other in the end. You've got to wonder why he hasn't made it about the war, unless he's supportive of the war. Anyway, watching the whole campaign unfold in front of our eyes is kind of interesting, and watching what's going on right now is kind of interesting. I'm very much interested in politics, but not particularly interested in either one of the candidates, to be not on fire about either one of the candidates. I love political elections where I can really be on fire about a candidate, but in this particular election, I'm just not on fire either way. I'm sort of sitting back and watching it in a kind of a detached way. International Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art. How are you?
I'm very well, sir. And you?
Oh, good. I was wondering, has Harp made an appearance since October 23rd, 1997?
Has Harp?
Harlot.
Harlot. Oh, my God. That's an old show. I have not talked with Harlot since the last program we did.
And she has not been in contact with you?
No, she has not been in contact with me. And I don't know if I want to be in contact with her.
Well,
That show...
I know,
honest to God, it scared me. That show scared me. And it should have scared you. You heard it, obviously, right?
Well, of course.
How could you not be scared by a woman who would see her child go to hell, do everything she could to see to it that her child...
I worship Satan.
Oh, my God. Do you really?
Yes. So, obviously, I would love it. And I do love it. And I wish you would have her on the air again.
Let us explore this a little bit. You worship Satan.
Yes.
Who do you consider Satan to be?
Someone, Art, that is wonderful and majestic.
Wonderful and majestic. Do you believe that the traditional view of Satan is wrong? I mean, you obviously must feel that way. You know, that Satan is negative, Satan is evil, Satan is everything
well, I don't
dark.
I don't see him that way. That's the way that...
Well, how did Satan get such a bad rap?
Well, I guess it must be, Jehovah is an enemy. And obviously he's going to paint a bad rap about the person who follows the devil, but I don't really follow Satan in a context that people would consider negative.
You think this whole hell thing is wrong? That, you know, if you're a really...
Oh, I absolutely believe in hell.
You do?
Yeah.
And how do you picture hell? I mean, is hell also misrepresented? Many of us, Christians, of course... Think of fire and brimstone and heat and torture and eternal torture, and that's hell, you know?
Yeah.
Eternal awfulness.
Well, Art.
Yes?
The problem is that people have been misguided by mainstream Christianity.
Uh-huh.
And they have the wrong interpretation of Satan and hell.
Do they now? So I suppose, given the opportunity to go, if you died, to go to the light or the darkness...
I would absolutely go to the darkness.
You'd go to happily just whistling along right into the darkness.
Art, I am perfectly possessed.
It sounds like it. It sounds like it. You obviously recall the Malachi Martin shows to even be using that phrase, right?
I am his biggest fan.
Oh, sure you are.
Oh, I am. I like Father Martin.
You do.
In fact, I speak to priests all the time.
You do, huh?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm going to receive my first communion and confirmation pretty soon.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Into the devil's club or...
No, what? Into the Catholic Church.
Into the... What?
Yeah.
So then you think that the devil's in the church?
Well, maybe not, but I intend to bring him in. Matter of fact...
You're going to bring the devil into the church. You're going to do that.
Well, I'm going to try.
Oh, man. I'll tell you what. You hold on, all right?
All right.
Uh-huh. You're just what I need. A Satan worshiper. What do you think? Is he for real, or is that unadulterated BS that he's just saying for effect? Satan worshiper. We'll be right back.
Sweet dreams are made of this.
Everybody, I'm Art Bell, and we are riding through the night in the wind, actually, and the lightning and the storms. And if you've got something of cosmic importance to get on the air, I've got some phone numbers for you.
To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Indeed, a good night under the circumstances to talk about anything you want to talk about. I'm Art Bell, and those are the portals to do it. Oh, that's too bad. My devil guy didn't stick around, and his line filled right back up again, so... Maybe I'll never know, but I suspect that he was not being quite level with us. Although, there were the aspects that caused me to hold him over, try to hold him over anyway, of the possibility of it. Now, the young lady that I had on the program that he was referring to, she was the real McCoy. She was so scary, that caused my skin to crawl. And many of you, of course, will not remember that program, but this is a young lady who was devoted to Lucifer, so devoted to Lucifer that she guaranteed me she would do everything in her power to see to it that her own child went straight to hell. I mean, it was, you would have had to have heard it and heard her voice to know how sincere she was. It was just, it was almost too much. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, Art, I wanted to play a game of make-believe with you.
I do that every day. All right, sure.
If you were Vladimir Putin,
oh,
and your country had been, had four terrorist attacks, one of them particularly gruesome.
Yes.
What would you do at this point?
I'm going to be absolutely honest with you. I think exactly what he's done. And he's basically, I believe, said that Russia will now go after terrorists wherever they are in the world. That implies that Russia will take preemptive, unilateral action to go into any country in the world where they think there are terrorists and take them out.
Well, I say good for them. I think what they could do first and do the world a favor is go in and take out that nuclear reactor before Israel does or we do.
Which nuclear reactor?
In Iran, I'm sorry.
In Iran, yes. I don't know. I suppose that if somebody else doesn't, Israel will get around to it.
Yeah, and I think that would cause big problems. But I think nobody would mess with Russia at this point, considering what they have gone through. And after that, they need to send out special forces units and armed with piano wire and take these guys out where they live.
The Russians do a lot of that, sir. In fact, you may recall that the Russians at various times challenged to be as awful as they could be, lived up to every minute of it. When Russians were kidnapped, the Russian KGB or whatever agency in Russia had a number of the terrorists killed and sent their body parts back to those who were holding Russians for ransom. And I think, if I remember correctly, they were promptly released. The Russians play real hard. And they've been hit terribly. I mean, if you can imagine 200 children and then, what, another 100 and some odd adults destroyed, killed in that attack. I believe Russia, and I believe that they will do exactly what they have said they will do, and it could cause a number of international problems. It's hard to go marching into another country and just go after people, but that's exactly what they're going to do. We live in very dangerous times. Wildcard Line, you're on the air.
Hi, Art. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've called three or four times before, talked to George, and relayed some UFO stories and time warp stories. What I want to relay now is something I find more important, especially being that it's September 12th. These are my political views. I have three little things I want to mention here. I'll try to go as quickly as I can.
Please.
Thank you, sir. I think it is extremely important, first and foremost, to complete a viable fence that stretches along the Mexican-U.S. border.
What kind of defense would that be?
A real fence. Let's get some big concrete slabs, barbed wire, throw her down, put the money in it. Let's stop wasting money on a drug war. I find is not in complete best interest of the American public. Pork barrel politics, money put into finding out what type of peanuts Americans prefer, you know, and stop not only illegal aliens from crossing over, but it seems now the Middle Eastern people are taking the notion of it's easy to, let's just cross over. Do it in mass numbers. Some of this will slip through.
All right. I appreciate your call. I wonder what everybody else thinks about the concept of a fence. All the way along our southern border. Do you really think such an idea would fly? I don't think so. I think probably parallels would be made to the Berlin Wall and that sort of thing. And I'm not sure that even with a fence, while it might certainly stop some drug traffic make it tougher on the drug traffickers, it would mostly stop the average, for example, Mexican or South American trying to make it across our border to better their lives. It would stop them, but would it stop somebody intent on doing us real harm? I don't think so. I think they would still find a way to do it. So a fence might be seen by the rest of the world in a pretty ugly way, but that's a small point. If we needed it, then so be it. I just think it would stop mostly the poor illegal aliens who want to make it over here to earn a better living, and would not stop those who wish us dead. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hey, Art, how you doing?
I'm doing okay.
This is Mark. I'm calling from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, 104.7 FM News Talk.
Yes, sir.
Hey, about that blast on the China border, are they saying North Korea set off a nuclear bomb?
Well, you've asked a very interesting question. The first thing I saw suggested it might have been a nuclear explosion. However, the a CNN story I just read said it definitely is not a nuclear explosion, and yet, you know, there's a cloud there that would suggest nuclear, and there's a hole in the ground that would suggest it might have been something as extensive as a nuclear bomb. So it's up in the air right now. We don't know.
What's China saying?
Not much yet. They're really not saying anything that I've got my hands on yet. So
they could pick up the fallout.
It certainly would not surprise me if North Korea lit off a nuke.
Yeah.
And I assume it wouldn't surprise you.
Not a bit. Hey, you were talking about 9/11?
Yes.
I'm 40 years old, okay? And I have a buddy of mine, he's 62. And 104.7 here ran a really good tribute for 9/11. It was hard to listen to. Is that good?
Yeah.
And we both said the same thing.
What?
Wasn't that 100 years ago?
Well, no, there's no time warp problem here for me with 9/11. I understand what you're suggesting, but no, it wasn't 100 years ago. It was just a few years ago, sir. And again, I really am curious how many of the rest of you have seen the coverage that began yesterday, actually even the previous day, of the 9/11 events, and I'm wondering how you reacted to them, seeing them again. You know, mostly in between, we've stopped showing pictures of the planes going into the buildings. But, of course, yesterday, for obvious reasons, CNN picked it up again and began doing it. And I reacted very strongly to it, very strongly, strongly enough that I said to myself, and I know my wife did too, you know, I can't watch this again. It kind of puts you back into it again. I understand it's very important, and believe me, I'll never forget September 11. Never, ever. But to get yourself back in that emotional state, maybe it's too soon for that kind of thing for some of us. I just don't know. It's an interesting psychological study. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, I'm Greg from Hollywood, California.
Yes, hi, Greg.
Well, I called because earlier tonight I saw what I believe was a UFO.
Earlier tonight.
I had just gotten off work. I work over in Hollywood also, but when I was driving home, like probably in the East Hollywood area, or like Eastern, there was like an orange glowing light in the sky. It was pretty big from what I could see when I was pretty far away from it. As I got a little bit closer to where I live, it was probably about a quarter mile away, and I could actually start to see like the structure of it. I mean, it looked like it was huge. It probably looked about the length of a football field.
You know, everywhere else in the country, this would be a startling thing. But when you're in Hollywood, for starters, I mean, if you look up in the sky and see something really weird, you've got to remember you're in Hollywood. But you think, I mean, Hollywood's a big place, right? L.A.
Yeah.
All around it and everything. So
huge.
So millions of people would see something the size of what you're talking about.
Right, that's what I was expecting. And that's really what I was calling about, to see if anyone else had seen it. Because I was actually, like, a couple nights before, I was out in Malibu also, and I saw something similar to it, but it was so far away.
Right.
I couldn't tell. I mean, it was, like, miles away. It was, like, out off the coast of Malibu, probably, like, 10 miles away.
You don't think it could have been some Hollywood stunt?
I'm pretty sure it wasn't. I mean, from what I could see, it definitely looked like it was huge. I mean, it had a lot of, like, you could see the structure of it, and it honestly, it looked like Saturn or something had come down, and it was sitting in our atmosphere, you know? I mean, it looked that big from where I was.
All right, well, you're right. We're both right. There are millions of people there, millions, and if something that spectacular showed up over Hollywood, I'm sure there'll be millions of supporting calls here. Or somebody will call and tell us what it was. International Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, turn your radio off, please.
Okay.
That's number one.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
Where are you calling from?
From Rialto, California.
Okay, and what's up?
I was calling because, I had some friends that had, told me about this, something about the Siberian hole, how it sounded weird, real evil, and I always listen to you every weekend, and I've never gotten a chance to hear that. So I was just, my curiosity is wanting to, you know, see what that's about.
Are you really sure you want to understand what this is about? You sound like you might be perhaps Hispanic.
Yes, I am.
Okay. Catholic?
No, Christian.
Christian.
Yes.
Strong religious beliefs, I'll bet.
Yes.
Well, this could be somewhat traumatic for you. I mean, I don't know how I knew, but I guess I knew the second I heard your voice that you were a very religious young lady.
Mm-hmm.
And have you been told the story of what this supposedly is?
Not exactly, just a little bit, you know, something that I'm not too sure where it's at. Maybe I think Russia, is that right, or am I wrong?
Siberia is correct. You were correct first time. And the story is, it was carried by Reuters, and the story involves some scientists who were drilling the deepest hole that's ever been drilled, and in fact, that is in Siberia. That's certainly true. That part of it is absolutely true.
Okay.
And the story suggests that microphones were lowered into the ground at one point,
mm-hmm.
and they did recordings, and after they heard what was recorded, they capped this hole off and ran like you know what.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll play this for you. It may scar you for some time after you hear this, but here's what they recorded, and now you'll know why they ran. That's awful. Absolutely awful. You can hear a man's voice. You can hear the screaming, and that's it. You just heard it. Now,
man, that just gave me chills all over my body.
I thought it might. So that's something to think about, something to remember, and hopefully not something to look forward to.
Oh, man. No. That's awful. That's really awful.
Have a good night's sleep. Remember, you asked for it.
Oh, the Lord is with me.
Yes.
And I have faith in him.
Yes.
He's always protecting us.
Uh-huh.
Our family.
Yes, you keep looking at it that way. And good luck. And I don't know. I hesitate these days to play that. However, she asked for it. And I could condescend. She was a very religious gal, and this is one of those things. Some people say it's a urban legend of some sort, but there was quite a bit of rather mainstream news coverage about it. So you can choose to believe what you will of it, but I understand. Believe me, I understand how it can set somebody like her, and just not be right for it. Okay, we can't take your last name on the air, so let's start all over again. Your name is Chad.
Yeah.
And you're calling from where, Chad?
I'm a truck driver driving through Nebraska.
Through Nebraska. Okay.
Yeah.
What's up?
Well, I was wondering, has anybody reported any UFO sightings by the I-80 corridor over the last week?
Now, you see, I know you're not just asking that out of the blue, so it must mean that you saw something.
Well, yeah, me and my stepson, we team drive, and we were heading westbound, right past Lincoln. And I was looking in the sky, and the sun was setting. Couldn't see the sun, but it was still pretty bright out. But there was three really, really bright objects, probably about 5-6 miles out from us, heading out west. And they were just like really bright lights. I mean, they weren't too big, but they were spread out over probably about a mile area. And there was three of them, and they were in like a triangle-shaped formation, but they were so far out you could see it, and they were stationary.
What do you think you saw, Chad?
Well, I would think it would be a UFO. The only reason why I did
Of course it's a UFO. But let's get really down to cases. It's an unidentified flying object. No question about that. Do you think you saw an alien craft?
I would say probably three, yes.
That's a yes.
I've seen them twice.
Twice.
Yeah.
All right. And this was on or just off I-80 about where?
It's past Lincoln, Nebraska. I really couldn't tell you. I know it was between Lincoln and York.
All right, good enough. Well, we'll ask the rest of the audience if anybody else has seen such a thing. But assuming that you did see an alien craft, you know, it brings up the question of what we're listening for if they're already here with regard to SETI, right? And you know what they'd say if they were here, SETI, that is. They'd say, well, there is no proof. Well, many millions of all of you, many millions of Americans now, have seen these craft. Many millions, as Chad does, believe that they are alien craft. And so, you know, it begs a lot of questions. I mean, what are they doing here? Why are they observing us? Why are they taking cows and mutilating them? And right now it does really look as though it is them that does that sort of thing. We certainly have not explained it. Some of the crop circles, no question, done by others. And so why are they here? What do they want? Well, it's been my view that nothing good necessarily as far as we're concerned. And that's another subject we could cover tonight if you would like to. And that is the intent of those who are watching us, observing us, or, I don't know, tugging on our strings as though we were marionettes causing us to do what they want us to do. Or do you think the whole thing is baloney? I don't know. That's one of the reasons we're here in the middle of the night talking to all of you, trying to figure out the answers, the real answers to those questions. I'm Art Bell, and the program is Coast to Coast AM. Right now, ensconced tightly in open line. Stay right where you are.
take a ride? To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is indeed. Good morning, everybody. Open lines. Our guest had a bad phone connection, and so we've gone to open lines, and anything you want to talk about is fair game. That's the nature of open lines, unscreened, unprepared, and usually pretty wild open lines. Coming right up. Now, in the middle of the night, it's just the two of us. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Good morning, Mr. Bell.
Good morning, Mr. Caller. Where are you?
Small Stones, Arkansas.
Okay, Arkansas. What's up?
I'm not really a regular listener, only when customers get me out in the middle of the night. And I don't really follow the communist, not the communist, but the Clinton News Network. North Korea probably did set off a nuke over there.
They may well have. I don't know.
But getting to Kerry, you can't pin him down to nothing. He won't talk about his last 20 years in the Senate. And his last 20 years that he has been in the Senate, he wants to take from everybody and give to the people that don't want to work.
Mm-hmm. You're, I take it, a Bush supporter.
I'm a moderate conservative. And I like somebody that will stand up for what he believes in and take that stance, regardless whether it's a popular or an unpopular stance, that I respect.
Do you?
Yes.
So then what is it you think we're doing in Iraq?
Cleaning out a hornet's nest.
Think so?
Yes, sir.
Boy, there's hornet's nests all over the place, and some of the other hornets have nuclear weapons and stuff like that, so we've got a lot of cleaning to do.
I don't think they're finished. Japan attacked Pearl Harbor, and we only visit that once a year, which is a shame, we went straight after them.
Do you think we ought to attack Iran? Do you feel that?
They have the opportunity to come clean first. Kid Goofy in Libya.
And what about North Korea? They definitely, I mean, they, who knows? They may be about to explode a nuke, or they might have just done it or whatever. They don't like us at all.
Yeah, and our president.
So should they, do you think they should be like second after Iran, or should we get Korea first?
Korea is going to be a whole other situation because our previous president before this one went to bed with him and said, whatever you do is fine.
But see, that was then and this is now. And, gee, now they're a nuclear power.
I don't think they're quite there yet.
Uh-huh. So should we get them before they become a strong nuclear power?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Well, that's a lot of work for us to do. It certainly is, isn't it? To get out there and clean up the world like that, the entire world. I'm pretty curious what we're doing in Iraq, and I still don't know. I told you I didn't know before we went into Iraq, and I still don't know what we're doing there, really. It may be an opportunity, certainly, to kill some terrorists, or would-be terrorists, or real bad people. You know, I acknowledge that Saddam Hussein and his whole crew were generally real bad people. But we went to war, didn't we? And I just have yet, I think, to see what justified our young men and women dying. 1,000 of them now, right? What is it that justifies that? Is it oil? Well, it's probably not weapons of mass destruction, but certainly would be in Korea as a first priority, right? So there's something else going on, something perhaps we have not been told about. A wild card line, you're on the air. Hello? Yes.
Art?
That would be me.
Art, this is Dave in Rochester, Minnesota.
Hello, Dave.
And what I'd like to talk about tonight is how the face of war changes once it starts.
Oh, all right. Well, this one's well underway.
Yeah, yes, it is well underway. And if you take an example of our Civil War, it began as a treasonous thing, a secessionist thing. You can't cut the Mississippi River in half. It'll ruin commerce. And then once our troops got south and saw how these people were being treated, it became moral. And this is why Patton and Bradley and Eisenhower had our first immigration troops walk
through
the concentration camp.
Sir, do you think that the war in Iraq began as an immoral war and became moral?
I believe it started as a political war and then has changed into a moral conflict.
So it's found its moral reason to be. And that reason is?
And that reason is, who knows what the desert holds.
I'm sorry, I have a problem with that. That's not a moral reason. That's like the reason the man climbed the mountain. Why do you climb mountains? Well, because it's there. That's it. So, I don't know. Stating because it's there is probably not the highest moral reason that I've ever heard somebody utter. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, I'll tell you what I think. I decided a week or five ago that
you're going to have to get good and close to the phone. Where are you calling from?
Okay, this
real close to the phone. Yell at me.
Here, I've got the real phone here.
That's my boy.
Silver Spring, Maryland.
Maryland, and your name?
Ian.
Ian. Okay, Ian. What's up?
All right. I think for one thing, because the last caller, it reminds me, I decided a week or five ago that there is such a thing as the why not argument, and I don't care for it. It doesn't really move me.
Are you applying the why not argument to the war?
Right.
In other words, let's think of the reasons why we're doing this, and your reason would be, well, what the hell? Why not?
That's what that other guy was saying. Right.
Well, no, wait. The other guy was saying there was this giant moral reason that had come to be since we began the war. That's what he was saying. He wasn't saying, why not? You might be saying, why not? And I guess you are, huh?
No. I was putting words in his mouth.
I see. Maybe. I see.
So, but at any rate, I think, fortunately, I do think there's at least one race of extraterrestrials who is trying to make sure that we don't destroy ourselves.
Hmm. Well, what kind of job are they doing?
Well, I don't know, but there it's maybe fairly effective so far. But I've heard more than once of craft, unidentified, unknown craft, maybe stopping military bases from.
Now you're on to something. You're absolutely right. They in one instance here in America, the objects hovered above our silos and actually shut down a number of intercontinental ballistic missiles. Actually shut them down. This is pretty well documented. And then in Russia, there were some objects that hovered above Russian military silos back in the bad old days of the Soviet Union and began the a launch sequence. And if that doesn't scare you, there's nothing in this world that will. So I guess those two arguments might be made, and you might be right. Perhaps, you know, they're kind of laying a warning on us. Here's what you can do to each other. And look how big a mistake you can easily make. What do you think, sir?
Right. That's generally
your argument.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. Yes, well, indeed that happened. On the other hand, one could argue that there have been a number of successful nuclear tests that they could have intervened to stop, right? So you could argue either way on this. There was an incident in the Soviet Union. There was an incident in America. But the bombs did drop in Japan and did kill that many people. Hiroshima, Nagasaki, that happened. We have tested endlessly. Most of that went pretty much all right, even above ground testing. And no intervention. So, I don't know, you could argue either way. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello. Yes, I was wondering what you had on the idea that we're all just aliens, and then actually when we die, the bright light that we go to is the mothership.
Well, I had a guest once who said exactly that, that we are all, or the majority of us, are aliens. And he did it in quite a straight-faced way. I don't know about the light being the mothership waiting to pick up our souls, but there was an awfully interesting story about a translator on the moon. And I'm trying to recall who told that fairly recently at that, that captured, received, and retransmitted souls. And, of course, many things we're told about the aliens seem to deal with our souls, us, all of us, as vessels. And the real contentious point, and that which is being fought for, our souls. And that also works with the Bible, doesn't it? Very biblical, a war over our souls. International Line, you're on the air. Turn your radio off, please.
All right.
Okay.
I've got a question for you about shadow people.
Okay.
I've seen shadow people ever since I was probably 4 years old. But it's in a weird, I don't really see them like, real time, like, you know, here I am talking to you, I see a shadow person. It's always in a lucid dream.
Oh.
And when I was a small child, I had this really strange dream, and I saw the shadow people. So there were, like, hundreds of them, and they were calling my name.
Hmm.
And then, yeah, it was really freaky. And
yeah.
And I woke up, and I was just in my bed or whatever. But later on in life, I was 18 years old, and I'd fallen asleep on the couch in the afternoon and sort of had an out-of-body experience, I guess. And in my dream, the shadow person was coming towards me, and I woke up and I was in that out-of-body that state where you can't hardly move, I guess. You
know? Well, in a state like that, a shadow person ought to be able to get you.
Yeah, but I didn't feel like that first time that they were trying to get me. The second time, which happened within a week, I did feel threatened by it, but they've never harmed me or anything, and I've only seen them like when I've had lucid dreams. Really weird.
That is weird. Well, thanks. I don't know what to tell you, except shadow people, the whole concept of it, somehow came alive on this program, as it frequently does. Just one person makes one call and describes one thing, and that ignites millions of people out there who have had the same experience. That's how we know when we're on to something here. The mailbox just lights up. And that, of course, is what occurred with shadow people. And it's kind of been an ongoing topic ever since. Not exactly ghosts, not exactly spirits conjured on a Ouija board or anything like that, but a whole different class of beings known as the shadow people. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, just very quickly. This is Joe from South Texas and Elsa. Somewhat long-time listener. Just have the 2 points, not necessarily points, but actually something I'd like to talk to you about.
Yes.
Just very quickly, some years ago, you had a guest on, and I caught the butt end of it. I'm interested in tomb raiding. Well, just the game and the idea. I don't know if I'm sure you remember some guy about tomb raiding that he would be very well armed and so on.
Tomb raiding, the game, the video game tomb raiding.
Well, the game, but this other person that you had on, which I caught just the last part of it.
I don't recall having somebody on. Was it me or perhaps George?
No, it was you. It was when you were on full time.
Okay.
Well, I just want to say if you remember, if you could have that guy on again. No. Anyhow, the other part was Gabriel, the mercenary.
Yes.
Are you ever going to get contact by that guy ever again, or... Or does he call you? Are you ever going to have anybody like that again?
Okay. Well, that's a good question. To which I don't have a good answer. I don't maintain contact really with any of these people, nor do I know how to contact them. So I depend on contact from people of that sort. And toward that end, the way to reach me in the modern world is the way to reach most everybody these days. Email does the trick. So if you're a very unusual person of that sort, and you would like to reach me, you can do so at the following addresses, artbell@mindspring.com or artbell@aol.com. Let me give those again, artbell@aol.com or artbell@mindspring.com. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, Eric. This is Greg. I'm calling from Montana.
Yes, Greg.
Hey, a couple of years ago, you had a guy on, and he talked about this deep hole in the desert down in your area, I believe.
Well, it was initially Mel's Hole, and then sort of Mel's Hole 2. The one down here in the desert was really creepy. Really creepy. Yes, I know what you're talking about. What about
Yeah. I was wondering if you plan on having him back.
Well, again, that's just like the question from the last caller. I really don't stay in touch with these people. They stay in touch with me, and when there's something new to be said, that's how to get a hold of me. So if it's Mel of Mel's Hole, and that was creepy. The last story he told about the Nevada hole was totally creeped me out. But if Mel has more to say, he knows how to get hold of me. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, my name's Scott. I'm calling from Clearwater, Florida.
Hello, Scott.
Hello, Art. You mentioned why did we go to Iraq, and a quotation by Henry Kissinger the night we attacked on CNN. I was watching live.
Yes.
We're about ready to start bombing. And there was a quote by Henry Kissinger. He said, "The road to Jerusalem runs through Baghdad."
Mm-hmm.
And that's interesting because the name Kissinger equals 666.
You think Mr. Kissinger is the Antichrist?
Well, I'm not saying he's the Antichrist, but...
Well, that's what that implies.
Years ago, about 1980, this computer builder who built the computer systems for the European Union said that the word computer equals 666, and he was asked, how do you come up with this?
Yeah, you know, good. I'm glad. How did he answer that?
He used the R alphabet, which is 26 letters. A would be 6, B would be 12, C would be 18. You know, just add 6 to each continuing letter.
I wonder if the computer and the Internet itself could be the Antichrist. What if the Antichrist is not actually an entity or a person or something that becomes flesh and blood, but rather a whole thing, like the computer and the Internet and the whole schmear? What if that? What if it's the Antichrist? What if that connectivity, that virtual web, turns out to be the communications device for the Antichrist? There's a concept for you. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, hi, Art. It's Lindsay from San Diego. Go.
Yes, hi, Lindsay.
How you doing, brother? How
good.
Are you?
Good. What's up?
Well, I was just going to discuss the UFO phenomenon and why really the UFOs appear to be here.
Okay, sure.
I thought you might get a kick out of that. That buddy of yours across the street, I was up there when you had the helicopter visit about 6-8 years ago.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Quit doing done right, and I just thought I'd touch base. I can't believe I got a hold of you. So
yes, you have. So why is it you think they're here?
Well, you know, it's very apparent that one of the things we're not taking consideration is there's a time element or a clock that seems to be ticking that somebody else, maybe in the government or globally, are aware of, and the clock may have to do with something that we're totally not in control of, like asteroid. Maybe it's gonna be in a collision with the Earth, and perhaps aliens have been sent here for one simple reason, to take samples of everything that's on Earth in the event that we have complete catastrophic destruction of the Earth itself.
So you think then that obviously that if something catastrophic is about to occur, no matter what it would be, whether our own hand, nuclear war, or a gigantic life-ending rock sailing at us from space, that they'd come in, intervene, and save our butts, right?
Well, and not particularly. What if we already knew what the future was going to foretell? And what if the alien context is based on something that's going to happen in the near future that's already, that people that our government is aware of? And what if the government is working in compliance with alien contact in order to actually save the physical specimens of everything that's
on Earth?
All right,
I got it. Well, that's a lot of what ifs. You know, what if? Maybe. I guess you can go along with that. Well, if all of that happened, then yes, maybe. But is there any indication that all of that is ahead for us? No. So what are we left with? A bunch of what-ifs. You never know. From the high desert, in the middle of the night, doing what we do best, I'm Art Bell.
At area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Hey, you remember the guy who was a Satan worshiper? Said he was, anyway. Well, maybe his master's intervened because he's managed to get through again, so he'll be right back. If I recall properly, and I think that I do, as we were at the point we were disconnected, this caller was telling us that he was going to get into the church. Let's see if he's there. Are you there, caller?
Hi, Art.
Sorry about that.
Listen, when I was on hold before, it went to like some kind of a default message.
Did it now?
Yeah, and then it went into a busy signal, and then I got cut off.
Do you think perhaps the long hand of he who you worship perhaps came along and snapped the line?
Oh, I hope not.
Yeah, well, if I recall correctly, you were suggesting you were going to get into the church and bring Satan into the church.
Well, that's already been done, though.
Well, you were going to, nevertheless, somehow help the process along.
Well, sure. I mean, they're absolutely, Art. There are Satanists inside the Roman Catholic Church.
Hmm. So
sure.
Father Martin,
I mean, Father Malachi would have told you that.
He did. He did tell me that.
Yeah.
But you sound. How old are you?
I'm 30.
You're 30.
Yep.
And when did it come to you that the right path for you was, well, straight down?
Oh, well, October 23rd, 1997. Actually, your show, when Harlot came on, that's when I dedicated my life to the devil.
You were converted at that very point, huh?
Yep.
Hmm.
So thanks to your show, I'm on the road I'm on, and I.
That would be the road to hell.
Yeah.
Well,
but you know, the thing is, Art, is a lot of people have a misconception about Satanists.
Do they?
Sure.
And what misconception are they burdened with?
Well, they think that we're kind of ugly looking, and we dress in black, and we have long hair, and we look like the guys from Deicide. In actual fact, I guess we look like everybody else does. I pretty much work a normal job.
Just as warm and fuzzy as anybody else, huh?
Yeah, I think I am.
Well, but there's this dark side to you.
Well, sure. That that comes out in ritual, which is performed. I remember you had a Church of Satan representative on the air.
I did, yes.
Yeah. Not real impressive,
no.
Frankly, Art. But
oh, really?
Yeah.
And what would you have said in his place that would have been real impressive?
Well, he's an atheist.
Well, what would have been real impressive? If you'd been
Oh, Harlow was impressive.
Well, I know that, but I'm asking, what would have impressed you if you'd, or how would you have impressed me or the audience if you'd been a guest as a Satan worshiper?
Well, I would have come at things probably from far more of a non-atheistic, less material reductionist view.
Mm-hmm. And more of a Satan is a real entity, Satan is something to be loved and cherished and worshipped.
Yeah, well, you know, Michael Aquino kind of had a good idea about this. I don't know if you're familiar with the Temple of Set. Aquino did a pretty good job with this up until they really got into the medallion and degree worshipping. Then they kind of screwed the pooch.
Aren't you a little concerned for the, you know, your soul?
Well, I guess so.
Well, good. You should be. I mean, after all, if Satan isn't everything you thought and hell isn't everything that you thought it was, you're in for a rough ride.
Well, I think I am pretty much, I know who Satan or Set or Seth Typhon is, and his kingdom awaits me, and I will happily go there. You know, you kind of made a reference before the break. That I was probably kind of BSing, but I assure you...
Well,
I'm not.
I alluded to that possibility.
Yeah, yes. But I assure you I'm not, Art.
Well, I'm perhaps partway convinced. It would take more. You communicate with me by email and convince me, and we'll go from there. You never know. I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence about you, to be honest. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Oh, yes. Hello, Art.
Hi.
This is Keith in Hamilton, Ontario.
Yes, Keith.
I just wanted to say all these shows debunking did man land on the moon?
Oh, yes.
The Hubble telescope can spot a quarter at the bottom of the ocean, so why not aim it at the moon and see if it could pick up the flag?
I didn't know it could spot a quarter at the bottom of the ocean. Where do you hear that?
That's just what I heard anyways. It's supposed to be quite a tracker.
Well, I guess it's pretty good, and I guess they... You know, they probably don't feel a need from the people who are perpetrating these stories about the fact that we didn't go to the moon. They don't feel enough pressure to have to prove that we went because they know we went.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks. And also, I was just going to say, too, I was fascinated with your show about the Amish.
Oh, wasn't that something?
Yeah. You know, we're in a world of, what, you know, global world terrorism, hate crime, black crime, corporate corruption. The Amish, I've never heard a story, Amish man goes nuts, kills 12.
No, you never you know? Hear that. Actually, it was the Mennonites. It wasn't or it was a sect of the Amish or something, but he was calling them the Mennonites. And I thought that was a rather unique name, and it was a unique show. To begin, to take the position that you're going to minimize everything technical in your life, and we live in an extremely technical society, not something I'd likely do, but hearing about it was absolutely fascinating. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello, Art. This is Joseph. I live in the land of fire and ice out here in New Mexico.
Yes, Joseph.
I wanted to talk to you about shadow people.
Oh, okay.
I read once where the ancient Chinese prescribed marijuana for their people with gout. And they gave a warning with this that said, don't take too much, you will see demons.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm willing to bet you that if a lot of your shadow people, I've experienced shadow people, and I have experimented, and I'm willing to bet you that a lot of your people who call in with shadow people, if they're honest with you, they have experimented as well.
Well, and, it's worth considering, and it's actually worth asking a lot of them, isn't it?
Well, that comes from listening to George Norrie's host last night and what his topic was about.
You mean his guest?
Yes.
What was it about?
It was about... I forget the name of this drug they was talking about.
DMT.
DMT, yes.
DMT, oh, yeah. I've done a number of shows on it, too, sure. It's a legitimate question, I think. How many of the people who have seen these creatures, these entities, these, if you want to call them shadow people, that's fine, whatever, but how many people, and then beyond that, if the majority of the answers were yes, I used something, then would you conclude that it's a door, that it opens a door to that sort of phenomena, or that it explains the phenomena itself, that they were taking some sort of hallucinatory drug? Many would say, well, okay, then fine. That simply explains the whole thing, but maybe not. Maybe what it really does is just open the door. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Art.
Yes.
Am I correct? When I was in Anchorage, I seem to remember you were broadcasting from KENI many years ago, back in the 90s.
No, oh, you're absolutely correct.
I used to walk past Westchester Lagoon when you were broadcasting. I used to go on a walk under the Tony Knowles Coastal Trail.
No kidding.
When I lived there. And it used to be easy to get in your show. Things have changed so much.
Well, they do change, don't they?
Yes. I wanted to mention something about the political situation. I was surprised a couple days ago. I went on the Bureau of Public Debt website from a link, and I found out that the debt this year is not $422 billion added, like we've been told. It was $585 billion.
And we're going in debt very quickly.
It's much faster than what they're telling us. And yet, this is the Federal Government Bureau of Public Debt website, but the media won't report that figure.
Well, and one of the reasons we're doing that is because we are at war, and wars cost a hell of a lot of money.
Yes, and I thought of something. I was a Republican until last month when I changed to independent, largely because of this president. And I was thinking to myself, you know, you don't have to really like John Kerry a lot to just decide. Like, sometimes you're working with a piece of equipment and you just decide, well, I've tried this, I've tried that. Let's just hit the reset button. And that's kind of what I think people should do in the sense of President Bush. He doesn't really seem to do things competently, even if he chose something such as the course of action in Iraq, which I disagreed with and you disagreed with. But I feel that even if you decide to do that and it's the wrong course of action, once you've done it, you should do it competently, and you shouldn't do what, like, Rumsfeld encouraged looting. He made a speech and he says free people loot, free people make mistakes, we shouldn't shoot the looters. And that sort of started the whole country on the Iraqis on a sense that they could defy us. And it proved that they could defy us. And I feel that we've just got to sort of hit the reset button in this presidency, try something else, and if we don't like Kerry, then we can...
It does not look like that's what's going to happen. The Kerry campaign, in my opinion, seems to be floundering. And nobody's saying anything to me that particularly impresses me. And I'm not suggesting that George Bush is not prosecuting this effectively so far. We're running into a lot of resistance, it is true. I don't understand the reason why we're doing it, but it may well be that we're doing it fairly effectively. I hope so. I would very much, you'll never know how much I would like to understand the real reason why we're sending young men and women off to die. It may be that after the election we'll suddenly get a draft because we're going to need it. We're getting spread pretty thin. And I still don't know exactly why we're doing what we're doing. Maybe you do. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello there.
Hi. Turn your radio off, please.
Okay.
Excellent.
Okay, I've got it off.
Good.
My name's Jim. I'm calling from Seattle, Washington.
Yes, Jim.
Washington, and I was just wondering how much more those poor people down there in Florida can take.
That's a really good question. My wife and I earlier saw somebody had written on the side of a building somewhere before they evacuated the names of the two hurricanes, and then finally this one, and then goodbye. We're out of here. I mean, a lot of people, I think, finally are throwing up their hands and saying, I'm going to go live in Idaho or something.
Oh, yes. Yes. And so, I wouldn't blame them. But then you go into places like Idaho. Of course, you've got the severe winters.
Well, I named Idaho because it doesn't have anything quite as severe as hurricanes. There are not too many parts of the country that don't have something awful. I'm a fan of storm stories on the Weather Channel, and they will endlessly show you the floods we have, the flash floods here in the desert, the F5 tornadoes. Was it F5? Yeah, they had an F5 that they thought almost went to F6. That's unthinkable. I mean, just absolutely unthinkable. 300-mile-an-hour wind. So everywhere in the country has something it has to put up with. And if you go all the way out west, where you have eternal springtime, say in San Diego, then you have to worry about earthquakes or something. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, I'm Jennifer, and I'm calling from South Florida, and I just wanted to call and let you know that the people down in Florida and South Florida, I've heard you talk tonight about, well, like the previous caller saying something like you wouldn't want to live here.
Yeah, there's people, I suppose, in Florida now just sort of throwing up their hands and saying, three is too many, I'm out of here.
I'll tell you, I've been very scared. I have two small kids. I work at night. That's why I'm calling now. But it's been really stressful. I was without lights for 6 days.
Right.
And, I mean, I was getting to the point where I was already calling, you know, the city commissioner. I was just so upset.
No, I hear you. I mean, this would be never, seemingly never-ending stress. It's gone on and on and on and on, and now it looks like we've got another one coming up the chute. This one bigger than ever. And
is it? Yeah. I haven't seen it, you know, really. I'm trying to, like, get the hurricane mode out of my mind. Hopefully this is the last one, but they're saying it's going to hit probably the panhandle, and I'm by Miami, so.
Well, the latest is it's moved a little farther west than they thought. But you know what? As it starts north, there really are no guarantees at all
exactly.
of what it could do. And it could come in on the coast of Florida and still cut right across it.
The science
is not that well. You know, we don't have it down that well. Hurricanes
right.
just do weird things.
Well, it's been really nice and kind of comforting, actually, with the weather guys down here on all the stations. It's, you know, it's on like 24 hours a day, and it is kind of a comfort, but.
But still, overall,
much.
It's stressful, right? I mean, three hurricanes in a row, it begins to get to you.
Very stressful.
Well, so what about you? Are you going to stick it out in Florida?
Yeah, I was born here. So I was born in Miami in 68, and I haven't really had any big hurricanes. I was here for Andrew, but I was up in the Coral Springs area. We lost a lot of big trees, but nothing like the people in Homestead.
Right. All right.
A friend of mine, she was telling me she lived a month without lights.
A month without electricity.
Yep. And I was 6 days, and I was complaining, so I couldn't even imagine.
You just simply don't realize how important electricity is in your life until it's gone, do you?
Big time.
Yeah,
big time.
Big time is right. All right, thank you very much. And if you doubt it, I used to tell my audience this. Go outside on a nice night some night, you know, with a flashlight, don't hurt yourself. And if you're able, throw off the main power switch to your house. And what you're going back into is kind of a tomb. Actually, it's a bad idea. Don't do that. But if you were to do that, you'd return to what's virtually a tomb inside. It's really weird. And I, too, feel for all of you in Florida. It does look, by the way, the storm track has shifted to the west. In fact, it was almost as if the hand of God or somebody moved it away from Jamaica. I wonder how many of you watched that. It was kind of bizarre. The storm was headed in a west-northwesterly direction directly at Jamaica. The eye was going to make landfall on Jamaica and do absolute terror. But when it got to Jamaica, it turned left. It made a hard left and went directly west. And as much damage as was done, not nearly so much as could have been done. And that jog was almost bizarre. And then it resumed a west-northwesterly course. But, I mean, it was so strange that it literally came up to that point, stopped cold, and turned left, as in going further west. Just skirting Jamaica. It was an amazing thing to watch. Wild card line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, turn your radio off, please.
All right, we're off.
Oh, good.
All right.
You're in a truck somewhere, right?
I'm actually in a car. Driving across the country. We're in Idaho right now.
Idaho. I just talked about Idaho.
Yeah, you did. We went through the Badlands, I guess, two nights ago.
Yes, sir.
And we saw some really bizarre lights. And we just wondered if anybody else had seen anything like that, or if you've ever heard about anything like that. Like low blinking lights where there didn't seem to be any structures or houses or anything to make any sense of it. You know, you go back to the Badlands the next day and there's just nothing out there except these bizarre, you know, rock formations and everything. Nothing that seems like it would be giving off.
Yeah, I've got to admit, on long drives through the kind of areas that you're talking about, for me down in Texas a lot, in Arizona, and I do a lot of night driving because I prefer night driving, actually. And you do see these things off in the distance that you never seem to get closer to.
Right.
And they just sort of hang there and twinkle at you. It's really weird. I know what you're talking about, but I have no idea what it is.
Two other points. One, can you tell us where we can find out more information about that tape that you played of the noises in the holes in Siberia?
Oh, yeah, sure. You can research it on the Internet and just go to Google and put in Russian hellhole or something like that.
Hellhole?
Hellhole. H-E-double hockey stick, you know, hell.
All right.
And, you know, there are many things that will say, well, it's a, you know, urban legend of some sort or another. But, in fact, the mainstream media did cover it, and it was a real story. And whether or not what I have is an actual recording, I have reason to believe that it is.
Okay.
Okay?
Only other thing I want to say is that people do have a third choice in this election. There is Ralph Nader to vote for. You guys should consider that.
Well, there is, but is he realistically electable?
Well, that's a good question, but you're talking about
that's a really important
campaign.
Question. That's a really important question.
But if the Kerry campaign really implodes in the next few weeks, as many people, not just yourself, lots of people are saying that
yes,
it's really falling apart, if that happens, there's still a lot of people that really want to voice some sort of opposition to the direction that our country's going in.
Well, you're right. I mean, it is a point. I mean, it's something you can, I suppose, do as sort of a protest. And that's what it is, kind of a protest. The whole election thing this year is very interesting from a number of points of view. Anyway, listen, we'll be back tomorrow night when hopefully we'll have a very good connection with Lynn McTaggart, tomorrow night's guest. From the high desert, in the middle of the night, we're out of time. So, good night, all. It's been a pleasure. Ciao.